You are about to opt in to Monerotopia, a show for the Monero community where all are welcome to join, from noob to maxi, no matter what bags you hold. Just sit back and relax to the sweet sounds of Monero's latest progress, or if you're feeling inspired, join us on stage. Remember, the only thing that can stop Monero is a false belief that it can be stopped. And if you want to win the revolution faster, we recommend you remove your XMR from all custodial exchanges immediately. Warning, boating accidents are common around here. Don't forget to properly secure your private keys. Monerotopia starts now.
All righty. How's our sound?
How's our sound, everyone, as usual? We always...
Back to our shitty mic system. But we needed it because
we had multiple people, yeah.
But yeah, can you guys hear us?
How's the sound, my friends? Please throw it in the chat.
Let us know if you guys can hear us. It sounds like a little, I don't know.
Yeah, it sounds fuzzy.
But it's all right. Just go do the job. So yeah, we're live at the Finney Forum in Dallas, Texas.
Loud and clear. All right, thank you, Justin.
We got the whole crew together.
I know, I'm here. Hi, guys.
Right now, nobody's out here because Seth is giving a talk, Seth for Privacy. And so everybody's in listening to that, which is understandable. So we're in a...
perfect time to do the price.
Yeah, perfect time to do the price. Talk's always thinking, always figuring things out. Great to see you, by the way, man.
Yeah.
In person. It's been a while.
That penguin guy. Surprise him.
Talk a little closer to that.
There we go. Is that better?
Yeah. Tux, what's your take on Finney Forum so far?
It's been great. It's been great. It's cool to see... there's a decent amount of people, not a huge conference, but it's interesting to see like some more Bitcoin people and Monero people at the same conference, which I don't think historically has really been the case.
Yeah.
It's usually been pretty separated.
Yep.
So that's been interesting to see like a lot of different types of projects related to Bitcoin.
Yeah. I'd say it's a, as you'd expect, a nice group of people, right? All freedom loving people. All, I would imagine, philosophically aligned in some way, hanging out here, figuring out how to do Bitcoin privately and or use Monero. So it's a good environment to be around. Met a lot of cool people that, you know, I haven't already yet met at Monero conferences. So it's interesting in that respect too, kind of like allowing us to branch out and meet people. A lot of people actually, I was surprised already, you know, they know about Monero talk and stuff, which is awesome. Like, we met a lot of people who said they discovered Monero through our podcast. Super excited about that. That means we must be doing something right?
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the reasons I discovered Monero. It was Monero talk and then Seth for Privacy, and had like the most resources to like learn about at the time.
That's amazing.
But yeah, I'd say the Bitcoin people here are probably more of the like what you consider the OG Bitcoiners that wanted to see Bitcoin go into this direction of what it was supposed to be, this peer-to-peer digital cash that was sovereign that you could just use. But unfortunately, that's not quite what's happened. And so there's now like a seen necessity for Monero to fulfill that original mission.
Exactly. Let's get this guy on real quick before we do price report, because he's just an example of one of the cool dudes I met here at Finney Forum.
Right there.
He could give us our... Yeah, camera's right there. Do we have a mic for him? We'll just use this mic.
Yeah,
you want to quickly introduce yourself? Give us your take on Finney.
What's up? Hey, I'm Vince. Thanks. Yeah. It's great. It's boutique. The people are really cool. Like, it's weird. I don't know. I feel like I know like half the people now. Here's the thing. I have a Bitcoin meetup where I live. I hope they're not watching. It's the most boring meetup on the planet. So I've already had fun in the first 5 minutes here than I had the entire meetup. I'm kidding everyone at that meetup, not. So yeah, hey, I met Doug. I met, what was your name?
Tux.
Just met him now. What was your name?
Sunita.
Sunita, what's up?
And what's like kind of, you're more a Bitcoin guy, Monero guy. What's your standing there? Why are you here? Why Finney Forum?
So my wife's pregnant. That's actually true. This is like my bachelor party. Just kidding. No, she's pregnant. So we just found out. So I have like one final week before I'm stuck for 18 years. No, I'm just kidding. I just came out here because I don't know. I'm interested in all this stuff like everyone else is. I've checked out Monerotopia. Looks awesome. this is like the very cheaper version. This is like the subdued version. So this is more like getting my feet wet in it. Yeah, like what am I into, Bitcoin or Monero? Well, glad you asked. Forever, I was wondering, I was like, why is there not, if you're an Apple user, and tell me to stop shilling my stuff whenever you want, but I would be looking, I'd be like, why is there not a Bitcoin halving countdown like widget? Like if you look on the App Store, there's no such thing as a Bitcoin halving widget. Like, you know, you just like, just kind of check it. It's the world's biggest event that's coming up. Obviously, like the actual date, probably nothing's going to happen. It's not like you're going to hear like a noise when it happens, but it's like an exciting countdown. So, yeah, for years, I like went to coding schools. I went to this one coding school for like 4 months, complete disaster. The teacher quit on the first week and I had like upended my entire life. I sold everything. I sold some of my grandpa's gold to go to it. Jeez. And the point of this is I tried to learn how to code. Nothing worked. I used ChatGPT and I made this app like within 2 weeks. And all it is a Bitcoin halving countdown app, and cutest app ever. If you want to look it up, it's on the App Store. It's just called Bitcoin Halving. Like 5 people have copied it since then. So mine's just called Bitcoin Halving, not the other stuff that they add to it. And yeah. And don't even worry if you don't download it.
We won't hold it against you if you don't download it.
Yeah. But yeah, thanks for having me.
And then yesterday you mentioned that it was nice to hear that you purchased a Monero Nodo.
I did.
That's awesome. How did you discover the Nodo? Just curious.
I think this is gonna sound creepy. I think I was looking at your Twitter, I think I was just like scrolling. Like I always like try to see who's in the Monero community, like what they're doing, because like, you know, like if you like try to look up like what to do with Monero, it's like, all right, what do I do? So it's like, all right, what's the big people doing? And I saw that you and is it Abdullah? Mm-hmm. Yeah, you guys are making the Nodo, and I was like, I have a Bitcoin node. So I was like, oh, and I tried to do a Monero node of my own, and it was so much work. So I was like, ah, so bought that. Very excited about that. Very cool. And you showed me the cool preview, and actually, it's real. it actually looks really cool. So yeah, that's kind of how I kind of fell into it.
Awesome, man.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for jumping on.
Thanks for letting me crash. I'm an idiot. You guys are too generous to have me on here. But hi, everyone. All right, you guys take care. Nice meeting you guys.
Meet you. All
right. Thank you, man. Well, he's an example of one of the many nice individuals we met here. You're from around town, by the way? Oh, you're from Sacramento. Okay.
Oh, yeah, that's a bit of ways.
Okay, so not that much.
Not that close.
but a lot of great people around here, for sure.
Yeah, I would need more people Texas going in here like in half an hour. So.
We'll have more people. I guess in the meantime,
we'll do
price report, yeah. And then it'll be bustling over here, and we'll get lots of different people to jump on stage live over here.
Lee Jokely.
So let's do it. Right, guys, like and share as always. We're at 60 live viewers right now.
Is that the true about in this time?
I think that's a very accurate amount.
Yeah, it's pretty accurate. We'll get up to the thousands today. 2,000s, maybe.
We'll have to check the Twitter numbers.
All right, let's go to the
Monerotopia Price Report segment is sponsored by Local Monero.
Aloha.
Hey, guys.
Hey.
Buddy, what's going on, man?
Buddy.
Just chilling. How is everyone?
Good.
Day two of Finiforum. It's been a nice scene. Right now, Seth is talking. So I think, actually, Finiforum is streaming live, too. So I assume some people are tuning into that now, which is very cool. Huh? But yeah, things are good, man.
What's Seth talking about?
We don't know.
It just said Seth for privacy. Yeah. He didn't have a topic, so no one
I assume it's
probably
privacy related.
Hopefully.
I don't know if he's presenting on Foundation or if he's doing his own talk, but yeah. But we've run into, you know, a lot of the familiar faces from Monero. It's been really cool. We all went out to dinner last night. That was amazing. Yep. It's been really nice.
Wallet, yeah.
How you doing, man? How's price looking these days?
Oh, it's just chilling. You can see Monero's price right here. It's basically flat. You know, we did before the run up started. Got a few new things to show you guys. Let's see. On YouTube, it says we got 24 watching, but we only got 2 likes. Smash that like. I'm not going to tell you what price is more. Mad gains. Smash the scene.
All right. Do it.
All right. We got Monero.
Yeah, we're going to mute ourselves.
I'm going to mute myself. Ours.
And we're going to lose. Okay. So we got Monero. Hasn't really done too. Or sort of the medium. Like you know, at some point, we're going to break out of that. The fact that down here, us out of the ultimately. Who knows when that's going to happen, right? Sometimes organic adoption move price just happen. and or perhaps, you know, some Monero to try and accumulate more of their bags. In fact, in with regards to big entities trying to accumulate Monero, it does seem like the pattern now here, bear market, when everything is quiet and everyone's fearful and hype is, I think these big entities do try to open the bear market cheaper and without pumping the price, especially sort of panic selling. And then during the bull market, the broad crypto, they sell Monero onto the market. They try and keep that price. My guess is that's what would happen over the past couple of years. And I can prove it. I can prove it. So let's take a look really quick here at the big chart. This is Monero. This is Bitcoin. And you'll notice that this is still, so you can see we're making lower lows slightly. This is accumulation zone. From a technical perspective, this is an accumulation. And the reason for that is, okay, so the reason for that is you've got the RSI down here. And you can see that the RSI, which is the purple, it was like the purple yellow, looks better. See that. Oh, you know what? I almost forgot to zoom in. Okay, so I'm going to try and zoom in these charts. I feel like YouTube doesn't necessarily get, so hopefully it's slightly more visible. Effectively, what we've got here is the RSI is making higher low. On the XMR BTC chart, the RSI is in an uptrend, whereas the price is still technically in this downtrend. That's called bullish divergence. And a technical get that, and you would say, hey, that's a bullish signal. That's a bottoming. So the other reason that we might XMR beat is in this accumulation zone is effectively this orange, a lifetime lower state. Technically, it's actually the geometric of you math geniuses out there. What you do is you take the log of price, you calculate the standard deviation, and then you take exponent of that result. And it gives you a different result. In fact, when you're dealing with exponential charts, you often take geometric average as a corollary of the standard deviation. Anyways, if that doesn't make any sense to you, just trust me, bro. This is a lower standard deviation, and we're basically touching it. So we are in accumulation zone here. Not everything is perfectly rosy with the XMR BTC chart. However, just from a technical, there is one more thing that I wanted to show you guys when I was like, hey, I can prove it that, that Monero is anti-core. Right here, what we're looking at is a correlation. So I'll show you guys how to RSI. That's so what we've got here, is the XMR BTC chart. You know, we'll delete that as well. So, if you like hotkeys, if you like quick keys, press the slash, the forward slash button, and that will bring up your, what you can do is just type core. Hey, why won't it? All right. So of course it's not going to work. That's, am I misspelling correlation? That shouldn't happen. All right. Well, here's what we're going to do. We're just going to undo. My trading view likes to do weird stuff sometimes. I'm sure I'm probably doing something wrong. Okay. Anyways, that should pop up there. I don't know why it wouldn't pop up. Like it always just pops up with correlation technical. Man, that's really weird. It should say correlation analysis down there. All right, whatever. This is a correlation analysis down here. It tells you how correlated price is to something. So what you can do is you tell it, what do you want to correlate? So it's taking this chart up here, which is the XMR BTC ratio, and it's dividing it by, so we're basically the currency market cap, right? That's our biggest broad view. Now just going to try one. All right. That's why. All right. Sorry to keep the show like slightly held up here. Anyways, this correlation analysis tells us when it's positive one, it means that this chart up here is correlated positive the asset on the bottom. So we're comparing against total. So when we're at, that means that XMRBT, our price relative, that would mean that it's correlated positively. So if the market is going up, that means, but what you'll notice here is that we're on the negative, so 0 point, and we're on the negative sides. I mean, with a couple little blips here and there, effectively since August of 2022, so since August of a year and a half now, Monero's price has been negative the total cryptocurrency market cap, or I should say the Monero Bitcoin ratio has been. So, I mean, this is like your proof right here. This is effectively, it's in a chart, shows you exactly what I'm talking about. During bear markets, Monero relative price to Bitcoin is better. Bull markets, that's not an accident. It's done on purpose. It's done the same reason the cabal suppresses. So, there's probably not too many charts that look like that. Maybe there's a couple, I haven't looked for them. So if whoever's out there are different charts, maybe find anything. You can also look at the XMR market cap dominance, right? And this compares not just against Bitcoin, it can see the entire market cap. And you'll notice that effectively we're in a bull. It pisses me off. I'm not going to lie. It pisses me off that that's how things are. But let's see. I didn't get around to publishing the Divergent Monero price. One reason is that, I haven't had time. But the other reason is that I want to fix the volume calculus. A lot of the volume in Monero versus the pair. And I need to really include all of this. So I'm not confident that I'm doing that, especially since the Binance delisting, right? A lot of that volume allegedly, right? Not that I exactly trust the volume numbers, but allegedly a lot of that volume with, guys, I'm going to put a warning out here again. Do not fucking trade much, like hardly anything through MEX. They are the new Binance surprise case. They will surprise case. Do not use, y'all shouldn't be doing it anyways. I don't think probably many of you are, but of God, for the love of your own funds, don't use that fucking, Qcoin is slightly better. I have far fewer things about them, negative things about them, but, But I've heard a lot of negative things about Mecca. And now, just like with Binance, now I have a personal friend that actually happened. Don't use bad scumbag. All right. Shit talking. And here's the XMR Ethereum ratio. Same story as the XMR BTC ratio. Lower lows on the price. The RSI, higher low. All right. At least one indicator. Yeah. So you can see the RSI down here is making higher lows. And from a technical analysis perspective, this is Monero, a bottoming pattern. And now we have to temper that, are we really in zone? We have to temper that with the rest of our market, because you don't want to look at one isolated Monero, some charts, and be like, all right, you need to look at the broad picture, look at the rest of the crypto market, and really decide for ourselves, is this thing getting close to a top? Is there a massive bull run? Are we about to hit $500,000 price of Bitcoin? Are we even? I'm seeing all the retard predictions come out of the wood. Okay, listen, guys. And I challenge them. I'm like, well, why do you think? Like, well, you know, higher highs and we've new all time highs. So $1 million big. If you get just like for the listener, take a price per, like have a reason for the number that you're, especially if it's like some ridiculously outlandishly high number, like $400,000, $500,000 big, right? We've almost got a 10x. I guess we need like to somewhere between like a 6x and to get to actually $500,000 is what we again, like just you're doing a disservice to your friends and your family quoting these massively high prices, and you have no reason specific. Let's go ahead and take a look at the overall crypto market cap, we'll start with Bitcoin. So, Bitcoin is still kind of doing, you'll notice that we set new all-time highs. City top would 74,000, almost 74. That little like attempt that I tried to draw the other day, like a rising wedge, that gets broken down, but honestly, that doesn't necessarily mean these charts are still quite bull. One thing that gives me pause here, a little bit longer of a pullback than prefer. It's the purple lines. You need to go down to the 1 hour so I'm better. Although I'm not sure how I know sometimes like I check out the videos here and it's like, it's hard to, the wave magic line. So hopefully y'all can see that. Maybe I'm in one more notch here. So one thing that happens, it's very common. I notice when you get a breakout, you'll notice the very short term, purple bands come to the upside. You'll usually break it to the top side a little. They'll level off, sort of establish. You'll actually touch it or very closely touch it. And then at some point you'll try to make a touch and you flatten out. You'll notice that blue bands, the short-term upper stations, they start to flatten out. And then when that happens, you're used for some kind of... So it wouldn't be reasonable at this to try and touch the purple bands here or the lower standard. You kind of set some kind of floor, maybe even like a fake out to the bottom before... right now, I would list chart just from a TA perspective and say, hey, maybe cool off period before we really try to... move. Now, in a longer term, you'll see this orange that I've drawn here. It's basically kind of like a hand-drawn forecast of what we might expect, these purple bands here. And again, I want to show you guys, these purple bands are formed from the previous all-time high action that happened. So, right, these two tops, these purple bands are like, they're kind of like an exponential version of moving standard. They move much more. They allow you to sort of capture exponential moves and have a way of animal. I invented them actually because, believe it or not, the stock market is so exponential that upper standard deviations don't even work. The stock market almost always stays above. It'll kind of like bounce off of them. And every now and then, like we did for the past couple of years, it'll actually have some kind of bear market. But anyways, these purple bands have been very useful for me, just kind of what the market's doing. And shockingly, especially with new trends, they're often very accurate. Been shocked at how accurate. So the point is that where I'm really with touch of these purple is where I'll be looking at top. I'll probably be selling a lot of my altcoin positions. I'll be looking for some kind of reversal. Again, that's tentative, right? When we get there, I want to see what the rest of the macro situation looks like on totality of the markets. But, that would be a target. Kind of like how these upper standard deviation levels for quite a while almost said, hey, these are my target. This is where I'll start getting nervous. And you'll notice that for about 3 months, it was about 3 months where they actually did act as until we started breaking. At this moment, I'll be looking at as a target. It's a very, very natural target coin price. So for the meantime, though, I think there's probably a little bit of consolidation that might need to happen here. It sort of already has been for the past week. But I mean, the reality is Bitcoin price still at $8,000. That's pretty good. That's hardly any consolidation at all. Those of us that have been here for a long time remember that sometimes you go down 30 or 40 bear market. If we were to go down 30 or the top here, right, that would put us at 5,000. So this is just a pause here. I wouldn't say that this is enough for the run is over. It's probably not quite. Let's take a look at the total crypto market cap, which I think is in your chart. And you can even see it in kind of the way you did a good job of just kind of a bit of rising upper standard. And then now again, I mean, same story as Bitcoin, the whole market. I mean, Bitcoin is half the market cap here. Half of this chart is Bitcoin. It's basically taking a pause here. It would be actually very bullish if this thing just stopped and things just started getting up right here. It's difficult for me to believe that this is the bottom of this pullback. Well, that's total crypto market cap. I wanted to show y'all something, basically a fractal T price. So this is back in, so you'll notice the dates down here. Look at the bottom of the see that that's 2021 from the summer, right? When the summer crash happened, the run up, I'm high here. So one thing you can do is go onto the left side and 1, 2, or 5 things down, forecasting and measurement. Okay. So you'll go into these forecasts and measurement things called bars pattern. Now, I want y'all to be very, very careful with this indicator. I don't want y'all to think like fractals everywhere and that you're like finding the pattern, right? Like full mind or whatever. But what you can do, click that button and then use some starting look. And you'll notice what happens here is you get the exact bars pattern. That's what, now I've already taken the liberty of moving that over. We're not going to do, I've already moved it over here. It's pretty dubious, right? This is always a humans will find patterns, other patterns in that pattern. There's actually a math matter in how closely matched a pattern is. I'm going to tell you right now that this is not a very matched pattern, but it is interesting. It has some dubious. It does have kind of a similar feel. So one thing you'll notice, stretching this, right? So what we're going to do is expand this kind of into the top here. It's kind of arbitrary. It is a bit arbitrary to how much contracted. But a little bit of a similar to that last run up. So hypothetically, do something like this, right? We'll put the first peak peaked out at the all-time high, that bottom peak. It's interesting. I just wanted to look at it. Like I don't really have too much commentary on it. It does kind of feel similar, right? Your eyeballs will find this sort of, okay, you had this big run up, you had this pullback, and kind of this violent move to the upside, and now we're having this. I'll be curious to watch this and see what happens. Again, guys, don't trade off this. Don't be like Charlie, the map behind you. Oh my God, if that fractal pattern, say fractal everywhere, because it's say, right? This is just like one little thing to look at to be like, okay, maybe, okay, hypothetically, maybe we look towards the end of March here. Somewhere around the $60,000 to finish sort of pullback and then maybe try to make to the top side. Again, 80K is like a tentative target. Those purple lines are actually slightly above 80. Will probably be 2K would be the place, like a very prominent place in my mind. Bitcoin dominance is just chilling, right? As I've said for kind of many months, I don't have any of this chart done where it goes over the long term. So that in the short term, but over the long term, I have been expecting Ethereum to gain market cap parity. Now that Bitcoin has NFT and BRC, it's like that's a place, right? That's a place to put people through the ringer and to make money. That's going to steal some of the market cap that is allocated. Now, don't get me wrong. Doing all that on Bitcoin is retarded and inefficient in every way possible. They've got no stable BRC20 tokens don't actually do anything. If you say that Ethereum ERC20 tokens don't actually, but there's a lot of them that don't probably. But if that's true for Ethereum, that they don't do much, then like it's even more true. Nevertheless, it doesn't exactly matter, right? Like that doesn't matter. Remember, markets are irrational, but so there's some level of market cap stolen to be harder for it. I still think the probabilities are that it will, but I've had to adjust my probability chain on Bitcoin. I've had to adjust my sort of internal mental probability of that happening. I still think it's probably going to happen. It will probably at some point become clear. ETF will be probably approved. I don't know. We'll have to wait. Maybe they'll like do the whole court battle thing, you know, where you've got to sue Gary Gensler, like, yo, you're arbitrary and capricious, bro, like rubbing his, he knows what he's doing. They always intended to do separate ETF and they'll spot. They always intend to do that. It's maximum opportunity for maximum news hype site to take money off play, to sell as much as at the top. Like he knows what he's part of that game. He was at MIT talking about the goodness of crypto for years before he got into the, okay. But in terms of the dominance here, I mean, listen guys, if this dominance crash down to the bottom, maybe down here, if we see altcoins make a major run, that's a big watch flashing. We see altcoins because we have some nice moves in some altcoins. Some of them mainly outperform Solas. I think Link and AVAX are still outperformers on Bitcoin from the bottom, from their local bottoms, although Bitcoin is equalized a lot. But the point is that if we see a broad altcoin at that, maybe we're getting a little bit long in the, maybe this run larger pullback, more 10 or 20. I really am at some point. Maybe it's a pipe dream at this point. Maybe it's a pipe dream and we're going to hit the upper boundary now before we hit the lower boundary. Still would like to hit lower boundary. It could happen in September. It could happen at 25, but I would still like to hit somewhere around $25,000 to $30,000 coin price. Big final, maybe a demand destroying event, you know, a tail risk event, crypto when the rest of the market tanks. So I would still be looking for that. But the more that price goes up, right, the harder it is to hold out hope that kind of washout, which again is like, that's, as I've said so many times before, my strategy here since August was like, my balance of probabilities was down in August, but then I set some levels and said, if the market passes these levels, I'm going to have to get off of that. And I took insurance plays that should outperform and they've done quite well for me.
And I've still got a big stack just to buy if we have a major crash. That's kind of been my, that's kind of been like my playbook, my strategy. And you know, I was talking with a friend about this in the past week, and he was kind of asking me, okay, well, what could we have done better, you know, in the past year? What, you know, what were mistakes that I made? And I said, well, when the market did something I didn't, when it went the opposite direction that I was, it told me, hey, I'm wrong about the markets right now. And he's like, no price cross threshold, pushed me off of a bear thesis and really into a bull thesis. I wasn't willing to buy because in my mind, it was like, okay, I'm wrong about them. I need to chase into markets when I was wrong about them in August. That would be like, that's a mistake, right? If I don't know it, I don't have a good beat on the markets. Why should I put that? Seems just like a bad money man. I've got these insurance plans and they have, which, you know, but I definitely left some money on the table by not chasing the markets. I'm comfortable with that. Everyone has to kind of decide their own personal strategy. I'm totally comfortable with that. To me, I like the Warren Buffett rule number one. Don't lose. If you're going to trade these markets, your rule number one is don't lose money. When you lose and you lose big, it's hard to come back from that. You either have to wait a long time to get there, or you have to take bigger risk. And taking bigger risk after losing money is how you lose. So anyways, just a little bit of self-reflection Saturday. Let's go ahead and close off with the macro. Not too much to talk about. I actually want to start with unemployment numbers and the inflation. We got new unemployment numbers before the show last week. Forgot to show them to you guys. So one thing with the unemployment, this chart is going to become very prominent. So if you guys remember during the bear market, CPI numbers, that was that we were looking at because that was going to guide when the Federal Reserve was done raising. And every time they were raising rates, the market took that pretty. So we were looking for the forward guidance CPI number. Well, that hasn't mattered for a long time. And although we cover it, it's like, it's not that big. And the Fed meetings also were a big deal at that time, but now they might start mattering. Fed starts lowering or guiding us to the lowering moment. But the chart that's going to start becoming present in my mind, tail risk means that at the edges of that bell curve, like it's a very, very low probability, but when it happens, you know, you lose 40% which for crypto we're used to, but stocks aren't, it only happens to stocks once every couple of days. So the thing is that this unemployment chart has actually a tail risk. And once the unemployment starts climbing, it kind of runs away. So we'll take a little bit of a backwards look here. You'll notice here, 2006, right? The unemployment bottomed out and then it jumped back up and it's like, okay, whatever. That's right. How do you know? It jumped up, it flattened out. And now we're looking at 2007. Now we're looking at December of 2007 and 2008 starts. And this thing has already come up quite a significant from basically from 4.3.5%. All the way up to 5 points. Now, these numbers are delayed by a month and a half, right? So every tick of these numbers that you get, you actually have to go forwards because you didn't, we actually don't get, so we didn't get the February 1st numbers, right? We didn't get the numbers for the month. I don't know if this is for the month of February. I think it's for the month of January. We didn't get this number until like the first week of March. So we're delayed by like 5 or 6. Anyways, the point is that as we go back, you'll notice, so here's the dot-com bubble. And then again, you'll notice at the very end of 2000, unemployment jumps up and then like March and April. It was March and April of 2001 that the major crash really started happening. So the point is that when this chart starts to move up and not just like one tick, it moves up, it holds, it moves up again, maybe it pulls back. And then that becomes a really ominous. Now, you'll notice here in 2021, that just smashed to the side. There was no, obviously that was talk about censorous, but yeah, you didn't really have a chance to get out here on, but there was an opportunity to get out in the bond market on factor. Anyways, this number has already started to climb. We can already see it's in an uptrend. Any major pumps to the upside, you'll know that we're probably, we'll say 1 to 6 of high potential for crash. We'll look at bonds in a second. We did get new inflation. The producer price in blue bumped up. This is nothing. It's the same. Basically, we've hit the sticky part of inflation. They're going to have a hard time getting the CPI from 3% down to the target. The core inflation is still slowly moving down. So right now, this is actually, it's fine. That's at least from the numbers that they report, even screwed up as they are, like, at least their screwed up numbers are looking okay. And inflation, like, I mean, let's be real, guys. Like, and this is something, inflation, just because the inflation numbers come down, that doesn't mean that the prices of anything come down. Prices are never going low unless you get fixed around. Prices are never going lower for anything, but they're going to go up less quickly. So like people mentally are still renew price of, but lower inflation just means that the number goes up less in terms of the stuff that you buy for. Yeah, those numbers are never coming down. On Twitter, I see, especially with degenerate maximum, they'll be like, oh, hyper. And yeah, the dollar's collapsing before our eyes. Look at the economy. Still order shit off Amazon. You still have money. Is there still money circulating in the system? Are you still able to like buy electronic food? Is there anything that you can't actually get? It's like, no, the economy hasn't collapsed and inflation is not in hyper. Yes, people are still kind of free. And yes, a lot of people are really struggling. People are have taken on a lot of debt to keep up with the inflation that's happened. But we're not, this is not hyper the collapse of the, anyways, but I mean, yeah, I mean, prices are high. I get it. Inflation stabilized over the course of the past year. Okay. Bonds here are another item that we look at that we keep in our eyeballs on regularly, because when we see violent moves in bonds, typically to the downside, see violent moves where bonds are starting to drop off and the Federal Reserve maybe starts lowering rates. That again is that we're getting close to. And of course, when we start to see the yield curve inversion move back into positive territory and start moving towards the upside, those two simultaneous bonds falling off the yield curve inversion coming back to normal, that is a huge sign for that that we're looking at tail risk potential, which for me, like, hey, bring it on, good tail risk event, whatever, Bitcoin crash, right? Maybe roll my bags a little bit, the risk assets as they crash. You know, for me, that's, to me, that's kind of a good thing. It's kind of a bad thing, obviously, it screws a lot of things up, you know, for other people. So I really don't want to cheer for that kind of thing. Last few things. We're looking at the reverse repos here. This is cash that's being parked with the Federal Reserve overnight. You'll notice that this has been highly bull market. It's come out of those two, probably risk assets, stocks. We still got about $400 billion left of this, but the zero point and hitting this highlighting. So yeah, you can kind of like, there's this curvature here where it's slowing down. So maybe they'll just stretch this all and reelect Uncle Joe, I guess. When I say we, I don't vote. Fuck that. But anyways, yeah, who knows, right? We'll just keep an eye on that. Again, it's sort of like the synthesis of all the info just talked about over the past. We're putting all that together. We're looking at all the different signs. We want to understand the total picture of the market. We want to put our TA in context with what the macro liquidity looks like across the globe, United States, right? You want to put all that together. You know, one thing when you're trying to understand the market, you get tunnel vision. Okay, this is Dixie. I don't even know why we look at this chart anymore. He's flat. We've talked about for months. This thing is volatility, collapsing volatility, not collapsing price, collapsing volatility. You'll notice that the highs and the lows are closer. At some point, this chart is going to break one way or the other. My guess, the break of this pattern is going to be correlated with the results of running out of repos and potentially that tail that we're talking about. The reason we keep talking about is because the pattern abundantly, this raising of the interest rates, flat top of the interest rates, and then down on the, that is a pattern that since forever when it comes to market crashes and tail risk, it happened at the end of 2019, really happened for you, but it happened at the end of 2019 before the stuff that they tried to pull on us 2020. It happened in 2008 or 2006. It happened for the .com. Like, this is the pattern that happened. So we keep talking about tail because it's there. Like, the tail rate exists. It's there. It's present. It's not particularly poignant exact moment, but in a broad context, your time horizon, that this tail risk has existed since last year. People have, which is why you kind of have the people, you'll notice the people out there in the trading price world that have been talking about this for a long time. And they're like, oh, no, not quite, guys. This is a very long, long pattern. And it's hard for a long time frame to, it's coming, it's there. You know, we talk about it every week and they're like, well, it hasn't happened, bro. I don't believe it's like, well, no, long pattern. I want to hammer home how, when you're not listening to me or someone else, that you can be watching this yourself, prepare yourself. I even told my dad this past week, I said, yeah, you know, markets are fine. Like, don't worry about it. But we hit like a sharp, higher probability of it. I'll let you know, like, if you guys are on traditional markets, this has been Aerotopia, so you're probably not. But if you are on, one thing you can do is take like a far out of the money put or some like highly correlated asset, like a far out of the money put that expires in later 9 months. And then you might put like half a percent so that if some crazy shit goes down, right, that thing's going to go up a lot in your stack. And if it doesn't, right, if you're wrong, well, okay, half a percent. You're not really going to miss that. The rest, say the market keeps on rising, you know, that shouldn't matter too. Even something small as that can really protect you and risk off. And that way you don't have to keep a lot of cash on the sideline, because otherwise, like, you have to be like, well, I think the market's going up. I'm going to sell my stack. And then the market keeps going up. You know, I'm out of the market here. So that's like one strategy. Talk to your financial, give me a call, bro. No, please don't make that your takeaway for drawing on a chart. Okay, guys, I think that's about it. NASDAQ. And so the NASDAQ is at the bottom of this channel. Technically, it's slightly broken down from the daily close on Friday. Breaking down this channel wouldn't be good, but that will be like a little bit of a signal. The next stop would probably be the NASDAQ loves to take trend lines slightly, can then come back in. Like right here, down here, you can see like it broke full day, that trend line, and then came back up. I don't know why, but traditional markets really love that. Probably because traditional markets are more as a gas at that. But the reality is that traditional markets encompass a shitload more volume across the world in a lot of ways. Maybe I shouldn't say quite accessibility, but I mean, it just encompasses a lot. And for the past like 50 years, the name of the game has been find a signal in the market, mathematically prove it, exploit the signal, make money. And some entities out there have been good at it. So the thing is that markets are not perfect. And this is why people are like, oh, you, the stock market, all of the people that, you know, all the brilliant mathematicians, these trading firms, it's like, well, listen, there's a lot of signal in the market. It can't all be found necessarily, like not all at once. There's so much signal out there. And when these guys find signal, they exploit it. So that doesn't mean like they're not exploiting nothing in the market. So yes, you can find this. So the point is here, though, that the traditional stock markets and TradFi, especially the ones that have lots of those markets are more efficient than crypto for the most part, because you have so many looking at them. And when you get perfectly efficient markets, any patterns. But because markets are, and especially they're manipulated, there is signal, there are patterns, they can be drawn out and you can beat the markets. But, you know, you really do have to dedicate a lot of time and effort into doing so. You can't just like expect to, you know, like if you're new to trading, you're like, you're the past 6 years, 6 months or 12 months, you're like trade, like don't expect that necessarily you're going to be, you know, going straight out the bat. Like for it, my first year or so, like if you go to my old Reddit posts on like some ridiculous shit, you know, like I was thinking about a lot of things markets operate in a period of time, you know, and the markets taught me, right? Losing money taught me what the market's wrong about the market. Like, okay, like how to adjust, how to adapt. And in a lot of ways, it was really helped to break me free from the sort of little bit of maximalist mentality when I got into, really it was Bitcoin maximal. I was never full. Okay. So anyways, enough ranting on markets and stuff. Let's see. S&P is still kind of in this channel here, but it's on the lower side of the channel. But yeah, I mean, that's all I got for you guys today. That should be pretty comprehensive cover of everything going on. Hand the torch off back to Doug and Tux. Right. Sorry.
Buddy, thank you so much, man.
Hello.
So kind of, I know you hate when I do this, but kind of in short, because it was a little distracting for us over here. What do you see kind of happening in the immediate with regards to Bitcoin? Because it feels like it's just kind of sitting on a ledge or ready for its next takeoff. Obviously, that's the $1 million Bitcoin question. But what's your hunch with the direction things are headed next for Bitcoin as it sits on this ledge?
My incredibly scientific, mathematically, and also financial advisor perspective is that we've got some pullback here on Bitcoin into this area right here along this like purple. So potentially, let's just say anywhere between 5,000, probably for the next week or so. We're not going to see too much. Like, don't expect too much here out of Bitcoin. Don't expect too much performance out of the markets. One thing I would like to see happen is altcoins start to run where Bitcoin is kind of like hanging out here. You know what? Actually, I'm actually about to go start this. Short term, I think Bitcoin's got some consolidation and pullback, and you'll have some occasionally altcoins here and there, right? Selected altcoins, but generally crypto pullback.
And before we lose you too, any new insights with regards to the increased transaction count for Monero? It's been sustained now for, I guess, like 2 weeks. I think initially everybody just thought it was a blip and it would go back. Obviously, we don't know if it's a spam attack or it's organic usage, but I'm just curious if you have any new insights or thoughts with regards to the increased transaction count.
I don't think that I do. I'm kind of trying to run some like very napkin math here. Okay, so we started on March, it's like about 11 days, almost 200,000. If you look at the moment that February 20th, we had 25,000 transactions. We bumped up to 40,000. So let's just say 30,000. Let's say 30,000 was like our immediate post Binance. Like if you wanted to make the case for it's an attack, we would say 30,000 is the baseline level of transactions. So someone's going to need about really want to totally unravel the train a deterministic kind of way. So 9 times 30,000 would be 270,000. We got about halfway to 140,000. So if this pulls back, like any major pullbacks to 50,000 transactions, I'm going to have to take that as a sign that it's probably that at least most. Here's another thing that might be. There's ransomware. There's hacks and attacks and poisoned outputs. Probably these dark nets. My guess is that if someone wanted to attack them, they're probably targeting specific outputs, right? My guess is they would try to put extra transactions specifically target particular outputs. Maybe I got to think about that some more, and I really like follow up with the output like Rutgers. But if they could, I don't know if it's possible to try and target certain outputs, but they might be trying to target people and to try and keep track of certain output to track those guys down. They might not be really trying to de-anonymize the entire chain. Again, it's one of those things like low threat model actors, like we don't have much to worry about. No one cares about the coin cards. The department of whoever is not tracking your purchase of coin cards or anything like that. But if you're a high threat model actor, you might take some extra precautions here. You might tread. If you're selling life-saving insulin in China, on the dark web.
All right. And yes, and let's bring in our guest. Bonnie, thank you so much, man. Please stick around if you can.
Okay. I didn't hear what you said. Thanks, buddy.
You don't have a
headset.
Max is just reading at this point. All right, we're gonna transition to our special guests for the week, which we have live because we're at the Finney Forum. Let's run the special guest segment to make it official.
Ooh.
Fancy.
All right, let's do it.
The Monerotopia guest segment, Bitcoin and iOS take wallet as you always do.
All right.
Okay.
Leah, what's going on? Girl gone crypto.
Hanging out here in Dallas with you guys. It's been a fun weekend so far. Yeah.
It was great to see you in person. I've seen you online for many years now. You're like a well-known brand in the crypto world.
Well, and we even did a video together like years ago. And so it's great to finally, get to actually meet in person.
Yeah, when was that?
That was when you were running for Congress.
Oh, that was when I was running for Congress.
Yeah.
Cheers to that. Thank you for doing that, by the way.
Oh, yeah, no problem.
Yeah. That was awesome. Yeah, so we've known each other for a while, but we've never met in person.
In the internet world, yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
So she's just as beautiful in person, guys.
Thank you.
Girl Gone Crypto, why are you here? Why are you at Finney?
You know, I thought that this event... Oh, thanks. Okay, yeah. I thought this event looked really interesting in the sense that it was like a little bit more like cypherpunk. It was a little bit more like privacy OG. I mean, just the name itself, Finney Forum, like, you know, obviously nod to Hal Finney is just in general. It's like, I think this might be a really cool crowd of people, even if it's not like this big blowout ETH Denver level, like, you know, size of event. I'm like, I like that, actually. I like the kind of more intimate, but it's been packed, actually. There's so, like, it's been really fun to see everyone engaging in the talks, and the talks have been really good, you know, and kind of like a little bit more technical, like a little bit deeper than you would see at a normal conference too, which is actually really kind of refreshing as well. And just the conversations you're having, like everyone that's here is just kind of like, really, you can tell there's a lot of passion, there's a lot of knowledge, there's a lot, you know, so you can get into those kind of deeper conversations, which is really fun. So
and I got to ask you, what is your Monero story? Because I know, you know, you're not, you know, a thing or two about Monero. You're not just, you know, one of these people who are just coming across for the first time. I'm pretty sure you've been well aware of Monero for quite some time and may even be a Monero proponent to some degree. Give us your Monero take and story.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think that like one of the things that initially really drew me to Bitcoin was this kind of alternative option from the fiat currency systems and from our, you know, really broken monetary policies and, you know, everything. I mean, obviously we're seeing, we've got inflation, we've got, you know, money printing, like all of these issues that we've all been aware of for a long time. It's like, it's really escalating quickly, you know, here in the States, and like looking at, okay, what are alternative options that actually make sense? And then when you realize that, like, okay, so obviously I'm a big proponent of Bitcoin, you know, as I think most of us probably are, but there, you're still missing that level of anonymity that you might want. And like understanding the importance of that. And I think that's one thing that I think a lot of people that are maybe newer to the space don't quite grasp yet, is that idea that it really matters, and that having options already set up before you need them actually matters, right? And so one of my favorite quotes, just in general about privacy, was it's from Edward Snowden. It's like saying that, you know, you don't care about privacy because you have nothing to hide. Is, you know, it's like,
yeah.
That quote, right? And it's just, it's so true. Like people,
because you have nothing to hide, is like saying you don't care about free speech because you have nothing to say, right?
Exactly. Like, yeah. And I feel
very
like
eloquently summed it up.
It really does, and I think that kind of gets people thinking when you put it in that perspective. They're like, oh, well, I'm not doing anything nefarious. I have nothing to hide. I'm like, well, I mean, look at what happened in Canada, right? Recently with like the truckers and like people that were just kind of loosely connected to that had their bank accounts frozen. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like that's scary.
Oh, yeah.
Like
terrifying.
Absolutely. And so the fact that, you know, I think people are starting to wake up to like, hey, if there is an actual option for these financial institutions and governments to have control over your money, then it's possible in the future that they will exercise that control. And so be like, okay, what other systems do I have? So I think just Monero in general just makes a lot of sense as something that you want to have in your tool belt, that you want to have, you know, kind of ready to go and understand how it works. So
awesome. Yeah. No, so you mentioned like Finney Forum is a smaller conference, right? It feels a little bit more niche, maybe like the earlier days of Bitcoin conferences,
totally.
Like kind of like the Monerotopia conferences that feel. So do you think Monero is, you know, remains as a niche thing. Like, obviously, you get it. I get it. Everybody here gets it. But do you think it goes beyond that? You're very well tapped into the mainstream of crypto, right? You have your crypto right. minute that thousands of people watch. You're very tapped in. Can you see it maybe go, you know, leveling up in terms of mainstream starting to understand these things, or are people going to continue to kind of roll their eyes and be like, whatever, what's the next meme coin? How do I, you know, 1,000x my money overnight? Privacy, schmivacy. I just want to make money.
Being honest, more the latter, probably. Okay. but that's also because I think that it just, this type of thing, there's a longer runway in terms of people understanding why it matters and why they might want to care.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that people do eventually kind of come around to that. But if they're just kind of a normal, like your everyday, like your friends that aren't, you know, they're not thinking about that stuff, right? Like they don't really, if they don't have a reason to care, people generally won't care about something, right? And so I think that giving examples of other people that maybe had their accounts frozen or ran into issues with the banking system or, you know, with government bodies and things like that, they might be like, oh, interesting, and then move on because it doesn't actually impact them personally. And people by nature, I think, are just kind of selfish and are like, okay, next, what does impact me? Oh, that meme coin might 1,000x, that impacts me. So I think that, you know, people tend to kind of gravitate towards that. But ultimately, I think that we are seeing a shift in consciousness where people are being more aware of these topics. Like it used to be that, you know, you'd mention quantitative easing and money printing years ago and people would be like, well, what is that? Now everyone knows about it. It's just a common thing. Or like you would talk about inflation and people would, thank you, sorry, I'll keep the mic closer.
Yeah, we don't want to miss those words.
I'm tromboning it away constantly. So, you know, and so I think that that's promising to me that, you know, the conversation, for example, like let's say Bitcoin, it used to be, oh, but isn't that just for criminals? People don't really say that anymore. You know, I think that people...
Now they say that about Monero. We've done it, guys.
We've made it. and so it is, I think, a little bit promising to see that the conversation's evolving, even if it's maybe not as quickly as we would hope. It's at least, I think, shifting in the right direction.
Yeah, for sure. How about this this bull market that we're seeing generally in crypto? Do you think privacy becomes a part of it, or do the powers that be successfully kind of crush it? Because it feels like that's what's happening, right? The delist, we saw some major delistings with Monero, perfectly timed with when the bull market's about to take off. Mm-hmm. Other things that are kind of going on out there in terms of censoring and not allowing really the information to get out there, I feel like. Do you think they're successful in that regard, unfortunately, or do people start to pick up on the importance of privacy with this new influx of crypto users and crypto interests?
I think that it's going to be a bit of an uphill battle, absolutely, in the sense that, like, they are, you know, the Binance delisting, that was a huge deal, you know, and other delistings as well. That really is, like, a bit of a, it's a bummer. That's a bit of a step back in terms of people having easy access. But ultimately, I think that, you know, topics that matter find a way. Does that make sense? Like, and so the people who really care about it and understand it.
The truth will prevail eventually.
I think it always does. I really do. And there might be some more ups and downs in the journey, you know, as we go along with this, as they fight privacy. I mean, obviously, they're starting to kind of come around to, like, okay, maybe we'll accept you guys. Here's some ETFs. Here's this. But, you know, I think that the attack on privacy is probably going to be very real. And it already is. But ultimately, I think that it prevails. Because, you know, we're always so many steps ahead of them in terms of development and thinking of new ways. I mean, the level of understanding that they have of, like, how everything works, like, we'll have new options that they haven't even thought of before. They're trying to still figure out what's happening way back here. And so I think that the people will find new solutions to work around whatever they're trying to kind of pull. And I think it all works out. Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. Obviously, we have the decentralized exchanges coming down the pipe. Obviously, some solutions already exist, but they're becoming more user-friendly. Sarai DEX. I don't know if you're familiar with Sarai that was presented.
Yep.
Or, well, actually, Luke, I think, was presenting on Full Membership Proofs, but he's also the creator of Sarai. People in the Monero community are extremely excited about that. That's going to be a way to essentially swap between Monero and some of the other major cryptos like Bitcoin and Ethereum, but through a decentralized exchange similar to ThorChain. So very excited about things like that will hopefully save the day.
That's right.
I think what we're all banking on. last question, because I know you probably want to get back to interacting with people. Any chance we see you at Monerotopia in Buenos Aires?
I'm thinking about it. Yeah, right. I think that would be really fun. So
fantastic. Hope to see you there. Anything, any information you want to get out there to our audience?
I just want to say thanks for having me on the show and, you know, inviting me to come be part of this live stream. It's been really fun to get to meet you guys in person and, you know, get to hang out. And you have such a strong community. And in general, the Monero community is just so wonderful. I really do like love that. I feel like I always joke they're the last ones that are actually here for the tech, but you know, yes. It feels true. And it's just, I feel like it's a group of people that really, they really get it. They really understand the importance of like kind of more of the movement side of crypto. And that's really refreshing to be around that energy. And so I've just always loved the Monero community for that and still really do. So
awesome.
Yeah.
Pleasure meeting you in person.
I know,
you
pleasure. Too.
Yeah. This has been fun. We had a great time last night.
Yes, I know.
Dinner was fun, you guys. We had
a really, really good time.
Yep.
Amazing desserts.
Oh my God.
I got a belly full of pecan pie right now. It was good.
It was really, really good. It was amazing. Awesome.
All right. Well, you get back to your thing. Thank you so much for jumping on.
Yeah,
really
of
appreciate it.
All right. Well,
Girl Gone Crypto, guys.
Yep. Awesome. All right, bye. Let's see who we find next.
Yeah, let's see who we pull over next.
All right.
Awesome. Thank you. All right, guys. Don't talk too close.
Yeah. Okay. They're like, you're too close. you are perfect. Yeah. It's always his case.
I'm always too loud.
It's like, hello.
All right, guys. Yeah, we'll
you want chill? We'll have chill. Chill's
yeah,
here.
Yeah, chill. Come on.
Chill, come on down. The next person.
Yeah, guys, we have a room filled with people.
Yeah,
now.
So don't. Hopefully, the sound is good. Let us know. But
we're in
between trying our
talks.
Best. Yeah,
we'll try to get Seth.
Yeah,
to jump up,
I'll go
but
get
I think
Seth.
A lot of people have his attention. He just gave a talk, so people are asking questions. Jill, if you want to throw these on, and then you can use this mic over here. Yep, there we go. What's going on? We're streaming live right now. Maybe do you want to jump on at some point? No. She's a true Monero girl.
Monero is the best.
You want coffee? She wants coffee. We've been making coffees. We brought Gratuitous coffee here. Anybody who watches the show obviously knows Gratuitous. Neil hooked us up with a couple of fresh bags that we brought to the conference.
Go, Neil.
We've been selling those. It's been great making coffee.
Yeah, don't forget to like the button, guys. All the live
viewers
right now.
I feel bad. She
right
wants
now.
Some coffee. Maybe I can make it as we do the show.
There's a lot going on here.
Chill. What's
don't
up?
Hey.
How's
it going?
Good. I'm having fun. We actually need tons of compliments.
Keep yours close. Yeah, I'll keep mine far.
Close. You got to keep it close.
Tons of compliments as a space because we do smart contract audit and no other industry does this. So happy. I love compliments. We always get the, oh, no.
No, because we can't
super
hear
close
you.
To your mouth. Yeah,
we can't hear you. We want people to hear your beautiful.
Jill, what's your overall feel of Finifor? You've been at various Monero conferences, obviously Monerotopia. You've been at ETH Denver, I think, right? You go to the big ones. What's your take on
it? It's very relaxed. The vibe, everybody relaxed. Nothing went wrong.
Unlike Monerotopia, that's part of the charm.
We were not in this. I think
fantastic. And how about the vibe with, you know, kind of Bitcoin privacy people and Monero people? What's your take on that element there? Everybody's getting along. They have
yes,
family.
Yes. Everyone is not here, just at home.
Fantastic. You're jumping on a panel today, right?
Yes, and I also have a presentation.
Oh, you're doing a presentation?
Yes.
Okay. What's your presentation on?
So it's an overview.
Keep it nice and close. Yeah.
Overview of the current surveillance landscape and the solutions that I would like.
Okay. What are some of the? Can you give us a little rundown?
No.
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 Okay.
Just have to.
We'll have to. Okay. All right. We got Luke. We got some heavy hitters. All right, Joe. We'll let these people jump on. I will see you on stage later. For the Monero panel, which I'll be moderating, I believe.
Yeah.
Who can we get to jump on here? All right, let's bring him on.
No, my back's too edgy.
We're getting the heavy hitters.
I know. Here, you'll have the.
Put those on so you can hear what's going on. Oh, he's got no headphones. All right.
Oh, okay. Share.
It's all right. We're not listening to people on there anyway. I guess so, right? All right, are there mics live? Yeah, guys, talk nice and close to the mic.
Hello, howdy, hello. Howdy.
Yeah, all right, you sound good. How you guys doing? Day two,
great.
Form.
It's going well to be around the ideologically aligned folk.
Justin, give a quick intro of yourself to make sure out there know who you are, who we're blessed to be next to right now.
Jay Berman on GitHub is my handle. I've been contributing to Monero past 2.5 years, working full-time through the CCS, and been loving it. And these days I'm focused on working on the Seraphis update, working with Luke on full-chain membership proof, the integration into the Seraphis library, and speeding up scanning. Those are the main things I've been focusing on as of late.
Minor things.
Fun stuff.
I mean that sarcastically. Luke, I feel like everybody knows you, Luke, but go ahead. Give a little intro.
Hi, my name's Luke. I've been sober for, different meeting. But hi, my name's Luke. Developer in the ecosystem. Done a bunch of things over the years. Currently doing Sarai, a decentralized exchange, along with work on researching full-chain membership proofs and taking notes on other research initiatives. I don't plan to go anywhere anytime soon, but I appreciate having more documentation and discussion.
Wait. Explain that further. You don't plan on going anywhere soon. What are you saying?
Well, I mean, one of the sketches I did was theoretically for private smart contracts. We talked about this a bit while I was in ETH Denver. Mm-hmm. I'm not expecting Monero to adopt that research anytime soon because I don't believe it's a good idea at this time. But I do appreciate doing the initial research and having it written down. That means if it ever does become something we want to do, have the stepping point, and we can evaluate why it's not something we want to do now versus can evaluate why because no one's done the initial research.
While I have you guys here, increased transaction count. What's your latest thoughts, takes on that? I think still very big relevant news for Monero. Transaction count took a bump up from like 20K average transactions to around 130K. It's been sustained at that level now for about 2 weeks. I think it's still up at that level today. What are your insights coming from you guys? What are you guys thinking? Is it organic? Spam attack? Is it an attack to unravel ring signatures? And any other thoughts you may have with regards to it?
First of all, it seems to, I mean, it's good to see that things have been relatively stable. As of now, it seems like a non-event for the time being, for right now. So it's chain is handling it smooth. That's good. As far as thoughts on if it's a spam attack or organic or a flood, I'd say I feel like I generally lean pessimistic. So until I see like news of some sort of organic adoption or something that would suggest that, I generally on the pessimistic side that it would probably be something not organic. It was a quick spike. That's sustained at a specific pace. All the transactions look alike, one in two outs.
Is it one in two outs though a typical transaction though, right?
So yeah, yeah. It is the fairly typical transaction, but I would also expect that
one in two out typical, or is one in two out and then two in two?
Both are very common. So I mean. I haven't looked at the numbers on it, but I would expect more of a proportional, more two and two outs to be part of it.
Right.
And
that's what I'm saying. Truly is uniform to one and two out transactions for this spike, it shouldn't be uniform to one and two out. It should be uniform to the expected ratio of one and two outs to two and two outs.
Okay. And we're not seeing that expected ratio.
Oh, I don't know. I was just questioning
it looks like it's mostly one and two outs when I would expect for there to be proportionally more two and two outs,
right?
And so other types
just
of transactions.
Someone's making transactions with that's just immediately sending all funds back to their address, which means the second output is zero. It would be
yes.
Yeah. Well, excuse me, I'm not used to calling it a sweep. I just call it a self-transfer. But that kind of suggests it's just one person sending one entity.
Right, because they're doing the same behavior over and over again, right? So Luke, is that your take then? I mean, any other insights that you might have with regards to this?
My offhand guess is most likely spam. I don't believe it's enough spam to be a notable attack on ring signatures, but I'm not an expert on this. I'm just saying I don't want to leap. I'm not saying it isn't an issue and it isn't a concern. It's because of topics like this, I've been so advocating full chain membership proofs, but I don't want to leap ahead and say, oh, if this is a spam attack, it's almost certainly chain analysis trying to break Monero. I think it's likely to be a spam attack. I'm not going to say it is chain analysis or it isn't chain analysis. I believe for it to be likely to be chain analysis, we would have to see this over multiple months. And I don't believe it's been going on long enough for make that guess. But obviously, I would defer to Ruckneum for an actual statistical analysis of this.
All right. And you kind of touched on this briefly in your response, but do you guys think the network has handled it well? Are there insights there as to what, other than full membership proofs, right, which is something I feel like everybody's on board and excited for at this point, whether or not this quote-unquote spam attack was happening. But are there other things that you're thinking, like, wait, maybe we need to tweak this, or we weren't really ready for this? Were the wheels falling off in any regard? I mean, did we notice any be fixed because of this transaction gap?
I heard Cake had some issues with the nodes that they were running, and their nodes see a ton of traffic, which would, I mean, make sense. And I think they spun up some more instances, I believe, is how that handled, and now things are relatively smooth. And also the pool has kind of decreased in size. There is an outstanding PR to the Monero repository that should help, that would enable more concurrent reach to the daemon. And so that's an outstanding PR that should definitely help in the situation when peak load happens. Things in the past, there were some things that have already been implemented in the daemon that I think it probably would have been worse had those not been in there already. So that's nice. Generally, I'd say that one PR, I think, should definitely use quite a bit. But it seems that, I mean, my personal daemon is churning away, and it's been to interact with as well. So that's nice.
Right. So it's in the situation where you're like Cake and you have a node where you're serving a lot of people all over you, right?
So yeah, exactly.
People with their individual nodes.
And I'll comment some more on that specific PR I was talking about. 0xffcc, I believe, is their GitHub handle at the start of it. And the PR is to implement a reader's writer's lock, meaning that, let's say, transactions are being added to the database at once. What happens is the daemon will grab a lock. While that lock is held, it can't serve other requests to, for example, read blocks. And so what would happen with a reader's writer's lock if let's say you have 100 requests come in to read blocks, the lock will hold and then is basically exclusively locking out other readers who want to read data from the daemon. So the reader's writer's lock would enable as many concurrent readers at a time, at the same time, the same data. Blocks are added to the chain. That then grabs the lock that prevents anyone else from accessing the data. So that would be a nice improvement for the situation of having thousands of concurrent reads at a time. So that's
Body. Just want to get Body's question out here. He's saying, wouldn't you want to maximize the number of outputs at 6 for attacking? So saying, like, if this is an attack, why aren't they doing a
large
attack
for a flood to flood and to actually affect ring signatures at cheapest level? Yeah, that the ideal would to maximize on the output side. So the other alternative here is a spam attack to try and bloat the chain, to bump up the block size, and mm-hmm. that's another avenue of potential attack that is in the realm of possibility. It's not the most efficient way to target rigs
if they're doing a flood attack, right? But you're saying the attack might be to just bloat the chain. Okay, Luke, I see any thoughts there?
Thought I want to comment publicly what the optimal way to attack the blockchain.
Well, I mean, was asked in public information. I mean, everything's out there.
You know, it's all open private source. People. Are we not allowed our privacy? Are we not allowed to privately know the best way to cause issues?
Well, would it be fair if only you?
Well, I mean, if I could figure it out, you could figure it out.
That's not true.
You haven't spent several years learning how to code, program?
No. I don't have your brain, and few do.
Well, I don't want to say that everyone should have to 10-year experienced programmer and fundamentally inherit these concepts and so on. That's obviously not what I want to say and what I do joke about. I do want to be clear. It is a personal belief of mine. Anyone can decide to take that path. And if you today decide that you want to understand the Monero protocol on a mathematical level,
possible.
I believe yourself off, man.
That is the beauty. I'm focusing on other things, but
I respect that.
Yeah, yeah. We all have our purposes.
But also, future proposal, we remove the wallet signing code, and you do have to use a pen and paper. So you will have to memorize the algorithms to sign a transaction.
I'm up for it.
It's the only way to keep your privacy.
Another thought question here. I see people talking about layer two, right? And now with what's going on, I kind of see that conversation coming up again. Any thoughts there? Have you guys thinking we may need a layer two at some point? Was that already your thinking? Or are you looking at this being like, no, Monero's fine. It's churning along. Looks like it's doing well on chain. No reason to really even thinking about those. Or perhaps we need to think about them for other reasons.
For now, I'd say, I mean, research is always nice. I've generally been a proponent of continuing the avenue research that Sarang did in the past. I'm forgetting who else was part of it. On DLSEG would be a cool concept to continue to explore for payment channels on Monero. That being said, I mean, the general L2, I mean, Lightning has had its own set of issues, and so that, like, it's good to watch how that experiment has been played out over on the Bitcoin side. That, I mean, I think for now it seems that the L1 spot is a solid. We're in an okay position here, and I think the focus should be on things like full chain member proofs and Seraphis and that upgrade, and that's where we could be going 100% in on at the moment, I would say.
All right. So, Luke, similar.
I do disagree a bit.
Surprise, surprise.
But I do agree that for now the L1 is still working, and I don't think we need to immediately branch out to L2. Practically with L2, a few options. We could implement the DLSAG work, although we're going in the opposite direction. So I don't want to implement the DLSAG work. It's basically a more powerful time lock. Or no, it's a secondary script that can be executed after the time lock, right, Justin?
It had a dual link signature aggregation. So there was like a dual output in addition to the time lock, in which...
But one was only after the time lock, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was basically what you would need for payment channels on chain. So that was one option. We're kind of going the other way. That extends what happens with the time lock. It's not just coins are available after the time lock, but coins are available with this key beforehand and with this key after, or similar. Very hand-wavy concept. I might have a few technical details wrong there. Sorry. It's been a while since I've reviewed DLSAG. But with Seraphis, we're looking at removing time locks entirely. So kind of just going in the opposite trend. Instead of adding more functionality around time locks, we're not looking at doing that?
No, yeah, no, that is the case.
Okay.
Yeah. But there's also the outstanding proposal. There was the proposal to have hidden time locks as well and move to that with Seraphis as well. And just, yeah, I mean, I would say moving in... I mean, it's a general solution. So like you need both the time lock as well as the dual output. Right. So it's...
My note was just, instead of looking at adding more functionality, two time locks, Seraphis remove time locks.
Yeah.
At this time.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like a unique thing to Seraphis, as in like time locks could have been part of it. Mm-hmm. It was just removed as part of it. There's general discussion to get rid of time locks.
Right. That's what I was trying to highlight. Sure. There are other things that could be done if we did want to adopt L2s. There have been some cryptographic time lock works. I will be honest and say I do not personally in them. To be clear, the cryptographic security of them may be fine, but it's basically if you have a computer, you can get sent a private key that you can't use. But if you spend like 2 hours of your CPU time, you know, you keep your computer online, you run this program in the background, 2 hours live the private key. So that's what the idea of this kind of quote unquote cryptographic time lock is. It's not a time lock in the Monero. So Monero doesn't know about it. It's still completely private. Larger cryptographic protocols such as atomic swaps be able to. And with these cryptographic time lock, can actually build panels on Monero once we have Seraphis. Right now, we're still missing something that's there. I think practically they're going to have too many UX issues, because if it takes the best computer in the world 2 hours to break it, and it takes your computer 20 hours to break it, you know, to solve for the time lock, to do all the math necessary to access the private key. In order to build a secure protocol, we have to assume that you can access the private key 2 hours. So we have to only use the payment channel for 2 hours. But then when you finally, after 2 hours and the payment channel's expired, if there's an issue, you have to spend 20 hours. So personally, because of how the timing has to be done and variable power of computers and how CPU evaluations work and the possibility of building ASICs to steal from Monero payment, it's not something I consider practical. The other solution, add functionality to Monero, whether transparent as necessary to support L2s, or whether it be a private smart contract solution, or even a private limited solution. Like Bitcoin doesn't have full programmability. It only has script, which is a subset of or a very specific set of operations. Monero theoretically could have that, but there's a variety of privacy in the private version, incredibly slow. One other option would actually to take a Sarai-esque approach to it, where theoretically Sarai has a, let's say, an economic derivative of Monero we call Sarai Monero, that presumably you send Monero to Sarai and receive Sarai Monero, and presumably burn Sarai Monero and receive Monero. That's the entire premise of the decentralized exchange. But theoretically, one could fork Sarai and replace the decentralized exchange component with, say, the Ethereum virtual. So then you want to have the privacy of Monero, but you would be able to do transfers and programmability of Sarai Monero on this other chain, and then still, you know, leave and exit the actual Monero layer one. It just wouldn't be cryptographically secure. It wouldn't have the security of Monero, like Lightning has the security of Bitcoin. This would not have the security of Monero. It would have the economic security provided by validating sufficiently stake.
That's like Blockstack is their approach on the Bitcoin side.
I don't know about Blockstack for Bitcoin. I know Build on Bob.
And then you were also referring to Paymo earlier. Paymo's time lock puzzles is that the protocol of the using cryptographic time puzzles to establish channels.
It just has, like, I wouldn't be surprised if you're legitimately discussing anywhere from 100 to 10,000x for amount of time it's secure for, which is how long you can use it, and amount of time the average can have to spend to actually access the private key.
You mentioned that, you know, you think we're pretty good right now there. Overall, though, like, do you guys have any concerns with regards to scalability on the base layer, given what we're seeing with each transaction count? We have, you know, full membership proofs coming up, which is going to make transactions larger, right? My understanding. In speaking with Francisco Cabanas, he feels pretty confident that we're good, that, you know, Monero is built to scale on chain. Do you guys agree with that general premise?
I think if you like zoom out with a really wide lens and look at the pace of computing advancements, like over the next 100 years, 50 to 100 years. I think it is probably within reason that the average, I mean, you think about our phones today and what the power of a phone can do versus what computers could 40, 50 years ago. I think it's within the realm of reason to think that eventually, like, Visa scale on L1 is probably a possibility in the future. And to get there, I mean, there are still caps on the block size, on Monero's rate of growth. So it's like a contained direction is the general premise and goal with the current algorithm. And I think there's absolutely validity and merit to the approach. And I think an experiment that makes sense to continue with. And so that is that's generally my take on it.
I don't personally against Monero's dynamic scaling. Sounds like transactions are still being included on the Monero blockchain. So I won't say that the Monero blockchain isn't standing up to the issues, but I will say from a fundamental design perspective, I don't believe a homogeneous layer one best solution for scaling. I won't say that as the decades pass, there won't be a inflection point where, yeah, we can do Visa on our phones and it's not an issue. But I will say, like, right now, there are discussions like, is there a blockchain network that can do Visa now? And it's not because we want to have Visas 100 years from now, when there's even more humans, even more payments, and when humanity evolves with this concept of micropayments. And I'm not saying it will necessarily be guaranteed to so evolve, but I am saying, as incredibly cheap and fast payment design, more and more apps are being built. You're no longer doing efficient payments. Like, oh, you know, like, once a week we pay your revenue from all the people who own your song. But there's been discussions where even as a song is streamed, just immediately paying out that fraction of a penny or whatever. So I think transaction load is going to go up. I'm not saying there won't be an inflection, but I will say if Monero was to actually be adopted by hundreds of millions of people, we wouldn't need transactions in 100 years. And personally, I don't believe any monolithic network is the proper design for that. And we should be looking at larger scaling solutions in our long-term design.
All right. Awesome. Thank you, guys.
I have a question for you, Justin, if you don't mind me asking. So I was standing over here. It's a little hard to hear what you're talking about, but I heard some locks and Monero D. And my understanding, the stuff was that the P2P traffic was severely affecting the RP, which I would think would be sort of separate things. But my understanding is that there's a lot of locks or mutexes going on between those two, which is preventing multi-threading, and probably to avoid some issues with that that haven't been around yet. And I think I heard you talking about a solution, but is there anything immediately being looked into that?
That lock, I imagine, is likely. I don't know of anyone specifically investigating that particular edge of the issue, that the P2P portion is actually the root cause of the issue and where exactly that caused the hiccup. I believe the reader's writer's lock would probably be, it makes sense that that is the source of, I would guess that is a sensible, and it absolutely is. But as far as diagnosing that specific issue of P2P traffic causing issue, no, I'm not sure if which would be.
Yeah, it seems everything's a little bit smoother now, but during the week of the, it was causing the RPC response times to be, and our load balancer was like, it's unhealthy, so it wasn't serving any RPC traffic. It caused a problem in our node manager guy, Tanner, had a hell of a time getting it. And it's good now. Everything's pretty smooth, but yeah, those
understood. That'd be definitely worth looking into.
Every human on the planet to run one that does all of the peer-to-peer traffic and doesn't serve RPC requests, and then one which only peers with this other node to minimize its peer-to-peer traffic and then serves all RPC. And really, you should have a third server as well, so you're not using Monero's RPC, which has a few locks, but you should be downloading all of the data from Monero's RPC onto your own server, which has a more lock-free design. You know, if you don't have a minimum of three servers, you know, let's say 24 cores, 64 gigabytes of RAM, maybe running a node just isn't for you. And that's that
was... Hey, well, one of the ways that it became a way faster was not by adding more, because we tried upgrading them to 2 to 4 cores, wasn't taking advantage of the CPU power. However, that same plan that required us to 2 to 4, because we were using a high memory plan, went from 24 to 150 gigabytes, and LMDB is using all of it. So it's serving, it's having to do very little IO operations, because most of the blockchain is in RAM. So it's really fast, but that's a very unrealistic.
And obvious, just talking about your family or a small friend, potentially a medium-sized friend for this conference, I wouldn't be surprised if a single Monero node was fine. It's just obvious discussing cake with its however many large swaths of users and all of the other people who are using its RPC nodes, despite not being cake ears.
Nine nodes now. Nine total.
Yeah.
Run your own node.
I don't want to interrupt.
When you have this level of discussion, you have this.
I want to take the opportunity just to get Seth real quick, because I know he's got to run. Gave his talk. I want to miss him. Seth, get up here if you can. Appreciate it. He already had his backpack on. He was running up the door. So I don't know how she managed to pull him back in.
I'm not running away. I was running to another presentation.
You're running away from us.
Yeah, from you. I mean... The conversation.
Which is understandable. What's going on, man? Any thoughts on what you?
No, they do. I mean, I've been hanging out with the two Justins and Luke most of the time, so I've been talking about actually a lot of this amongst ourselves, which has been fun. So, no, I think they hit the nail on the head. I love that we're discussing L2s for Monero. I think I definitely echo what the little bit of Luke's point that I caught, that even while we may not need an L2, the problem is consider L2s. You're going to need them before you have them researched and ready.
Can I add one note real quick?
Of course.
Even if you think Lightning sucks, like even if you hate it, I don't believe it's anything but additive, because it has the full security of Bitcoin. It's a more performance solution. We can say, oh, well, we don't want using Lightning. We want them on native Bitcoin. If they legitimately have the full security of Bitcoin, which I know with Lightning, you can get into a bit of discussions on, but with layer twos in general, it truly has the full security of the underlying network. And for Monero, you would also have to argue full privacy. Then it is solely additive. You can argue it's a worse experience, but that doesn't change you're getting more people involved. And
people have ended up losing money through like forced closures on, like people have stopped running Lightning nodes because they've ended up.
The big problem there though is it's like, I think Lightning gets more hate. I've spent a lot of time hating on it, because the core problem with Lightning is not necessarily a technological one, even though there are massive trade-offs that haven't been discussed. But the big problem is that people were promised that they could run a node, manage channels, do all of this stuff easily without risks. And while obviously that exact sentence was not what was promised, that was the gist. So I think the majority of the problems that we've seen in Lightning are that people were promised this utopia of layer that can do everything that Bitcoin can't, and it has no downsides. When in fact, what we're finally settling on is accepting the reality that the majority of people will not run their own channels, but using something where you run a node on a phone, you use an LSP, you use just-in-time channels, works really nicely.
Also, if you just create a single channel to some hub which is centralizing, but it's not an issue because it's still backed by the underlying decentralized Bitcoin. As long as you, what, make two transactions with that hub, even if you have to do a forced closure, you're saving money and fees because you're doing two off-chain transactions, which would have been on-chain otherwise. And then the forced closure is just adding back one of those on-chain transactions. I'm sorry, Seth, I interrupted.
No, that was a good point.
Vic is chiming in by this way and saying Lightning is coming to Cake Wallets. For those that are pro Lightning, it will be.
And just to interrupt again, before we ever give Seth a chance, how's the weather today? You know, what are you guys feeling?
Not sure if the thunder's coming through the mic or not, but
Seth, based on, you know, we were having that whole discussion about scalability, right? We're talking about Lightning Network now. I know you gave talks on Monero, a couple of years ago now.
Way back in the day.
But what do you think about Monero's kind of fall in the Francisco camp, or are you less extreme in your belief in terms of Monero's ability to scale on chain?
Yeah, I mean, I think Luke and Justin did a great job hitting on it. I think the only thing I would add is that it, I mean, really like they already harped on, but just this concept of while Monero works well today at the scale that we have for Monero today, things could quickly get out of hand. We're already seeing just a tiny bit of that with this attack going on, in that some people are having running nodes, some services serving remote wallet users, those sorts of things. So I think the big thing for me is, while yes, layer one does need scale and things like dynamic block sizes, etc., help it to scale in the short term, they're not actual long term. So we cannot support, if you think Monero will be something that many, many millions of people will use, we cannot scale that at all. It cannot happen. Bitcoin is having that problem. Obviously, weird thing, artificial block size limits, and there's different trade-offs there that they're making, obviously, but they're already hitting issues. They're understanding that suddenly, okay, we can't rely on this because we thought we could. Now we need to branch out into other L2 because Lightning L. So I think the big thing for me is I love the approaches that have been taken to help scaling, but just like in many other projects, there can often be over-promising things, solutions. While they help the short-term, or they help things like dynamic block sizes are fantastic for short-term scaling. Like if there's a massive rush on chain, they can handle them well and help things to come back down. They simply don't scale. And so they're nice solutions, they're improvements, everything at Bitcoin. But you will need some sort of a layer or other approaches that will help you to enable more people. You know, if you think it's going to get, it depends on exactly how much you think they'll wake up to the.
Hopefully, quite a few will wake up.
Also, quick comment, yeah, on the dynamic block size algorithm in the first. Like, let's say the entire world were suddenly to shift to Monero tomorrow. It's not like we would have multi gigabyte blocks, and it doesn't work like that. So fees would drive up. Would shoot up to on Monero, so like it's not like it can just immediately handle.
You guys aren't using transaction. That's what I set my default to.
You're preparing for the future. I like it.
Yeah, like if everyone goes to tomorrow, Justin's right. The block size is going to stay roughly the same. It'll just continue going up, and while it's still the current size it is now, but we have a million times more, whatever the number is. Yeah, fees are going to get that much bigger. And if you aren't paying one Monero in transaction fees today to prepare yourself for that future, you just aren't embracing it. You don't want Monero to scale.
Thank you for your thank you for your donation to.
I believe I care.
Body is asking. I tend to think ZK rollups is more in base like LN or other rollup constructions. Any comments on a tool for creating layer two?
So I saw earlier today someone who's working on Fediments for Bitcoin. Fediments are custodial, and I don't want to say that I recommend or endorse them. But the advantage of Fediments, which are Chami and eCash, right, Seth? Yeah. Is that they do allow private transfers. So that's one of the great things for them for Bitcoin, is that they're scalable and they have private transfers, despite in practice for Bitcoin, it's going to end up on a trusted multi. So I do think that with enough design, you could look at something like Cake Wallet has a payment hub. But instead of being a Chami, eCash, Fediment, whatever you want to call it, where they have all the coins, it's more like Lightning. Like everyone opens a quote-unquote payment channel to Cake. And I think the goal would be, instead of being transparent about who you're sending to and how the channels flow, I think the goal would be like almost a combination of Chami and eCash and Lightning, where you can route all your payments through Cake. So Cake is handling the scalability. If there's an issue, you fall back to the layer one Monero, but Cake can't tell where it's routing. And I don't want to say any such designs exist at this time. I just want to say, I don't want to rule out such designs. And I don't want to rule out the possibility of being able to say, yes, anyone can be a hub and anyone can privately route payments, but still with the security of Monero. And that would be kind of like Monero's version of Lightning. And I think that would be a valid solution. Like there are, since it's centralizing, I won't say otherwise, But if they, you do get censored, just fall back to the L1. So I'm not here to say there's designs for that already. I'm not feasible. I just don't want to completely rule out this Lightning-esque series of topics and discussion. Specifically with regard to ZK rollups, yeah, we would effectively need private smart contracts, and or we would need smart contracts which aren't private. I don't believe transparent smart contracts are going to weigh in. I don't expect Monero to adopt a dedicated transparent ZK rollup section. Like, we could do that. We could have private transfers here. And also in this second type of transaction, we just use, but that would require the Monero core team, or quote unquote core team. That would require Monero developers and the Monero community and the node runners and all of the developers, not only to agree on, but actually to implement some ZK rollup spec. And I don't see that happening. I just fundamentally don't see that happen, especially with a lot of the performance issues. It's not that they can't be done. Obviously they're being done with Ethereum. It's just, they're still very computation intensive. And all of the Ethereum ones are using it. I believe all of the Ethereum ones use a trusted setup at some point in the process for performance. So we would have to do it without a trusted setup. And that, once again, is even more. And that's why this private smart contracts proposal, yeah, you get ZK rollups and you don't have any loss of privacy and all transactions look the same. And yeah, it just takes you 2 minutes to send your Monero. Like, I haven't actually done the benchmark, so I keep like throwing out various numbers, and every time I throw out numbers, they're going to change. But it legitimately would be hundreds to thousands of times more computing expensive to create a transaction that's just a normal transfer if we move to this private smart contract design, because technically every single transfer would be a private smart contract. That's how we achieve indistinguishability. There's no different.
Got any other thoughts on?
Yeah, I mean, okay, roll up sides. Trust what he's saying about that. I think I would just agree with the sentiment that like a limited scope Lightning network on Monero is still probably the best case layer two. That idea of really embracing what Bitcoin Lightning has become, which is that end users do not manage open channels to lots of different channel partners. What they do is they run their own nodes so that they can handle their own routing. And then they use an LSP to open a channel to them. And then they have some short-term trust in the LSP. They don't have to trust them. They can close their own channels when necessary. They can always settle back to the base layer. But they're able to use them as a hub so that they can almost always ensure that transactions can get routed. And like Luke said, I think there's a lot of people get scared of the idea of central hubs in a Lightning-like network. But as he mentioned, you're not giving up trust to those hubs. And if you do it the right way, you're also not giving up privacy. So you're really getting a massive UX improvement for very little price on the actual trust and privacy.
I was just going to note, if we did do cryptographic time locks for Lightning, then the forced close may actually be like, oh yeah, just rent a server for a few weeks to close your channel. Like, there are some UX trade-offs if the hub fails, but technically it would all still work out. So yeah, there's a lot of discussions, but I think in the next 5 years, we're much more likely to discuss a feasible Lightning-esque solution than a feasible ZK roll. Because one, we can actually do with new cryptographic protocols, new applications, user systems, new entities stepping up to take these roles. One of them just requires hard forking and discussion that will never end. Like, I might propose private smart contracts 10 years from now. Like, I'm legitimately saying, yeah, when we have to go post-quantum and redo all of our current work, yes, that's when we should look at private smart contracts. 10 years from now, when we're going post-quantum.
I'm going
to
guess
Doug,
yes.
You have to stick around. Yes. If you're not learning Monero, you need something to do. If you're not learning the protocol, bringing the protocol to the people.
I will be here. I will be here. And hopefully all of you will be at Monero. You'll be at Monerotopia in Argentina, right?
I'll be there.
Yeah, awesome. Luke, I know you're...
maybe.
You're a maybe.
But okay. Will we be at Monerotopia 2034? Will you, Justin?
It's a good question.
Are you ready to commit? Seth, how about you? I don't know. Can we get you down to Argentina?
I'll definitely leave it as a maybe. It's a maybe.
All right.
Need to figure it out. It's at least like after all of the... So okay. It's a little doubt.
Yeah,
itself.
Down there. That wild lot big. That makes it a little draw for you. All right, guys. I'll let you guys go because I think we're going to kind of do this again on stage. Are you going to be on that Monero panel?
Yep.
All right, so we're pretty much going to have the same conversation again on stage, but it'll be more rushed and we'll only be able to do soundbites. So I'll see you guys then. I'll let you get anything else you guys want to throw out there?
Just a little thing.
Run your own node.
That's a good one. That is a good one. Please do. It's not that hard. It's actually really not to show my own, but I do have a guide on. So I've tried to make it as easy as possible. No, the only thing I'll just say is just this conference has kind of just reignited my love for Monero and the Monero. I love getting together with all of you folks, able to have conversations with, and just getting to chat with so many people is, I don't know, it's just, it's overwhelmingly refreshing. So I just encourage people to get out to things like this. I know it seems daunting to actually come in person to a conference, but getting out to things like this, getting out to Monero this year, there's nothing more important for you after you have realized out than actually getting into that can help support you, that can help you learn privacy in other areas, that can help you learn self-sovereignty in other areas. It's really valuable. So yeah.
Awesome. Thank you, Seth. Thank you, gentlemen. Any last words?
Run your own node. Please save Cake. Don't do it for Cake. Do it for their developers. They're running the entire blockchain in RAM. They're crying themselves to sleep at night. They're having nightmares about outages. Please run your own node. Not for Cake, for their developers.
For you. Do it for you. Become sovereign.
All right, gentlemen. Greatly appreciate it. As always, thank you.
Thank you.
We'll let you guys go. Tux, you want to jump back up? We'll try to do news. That was awesome, guys. Unexpected. I have all of you. That was very nice. All right. That was overwhelming, in a good way.
Yeah.
Okay, so we can attempt.
Yeah, I guess. Okay. If you want to do that, it's for you.
Going to be a minute. Do we want to do a viewers on?
No,
we got the dev.
Yeah, I want to do that first.
Like, all right, let's get the dev segment going, guys. Like and share, subscribe, do all that jazz. We have 435 live views. But that's if you take into account counting, which we will.
It's very motivating.
It's very motivating. Yeah, let's do it.
And now for the Monero development segment.
All right.
Hey.
how's it going, man?
Awesome. It reminds Monero.
Yes, it's definitely similar vibe. Although I think we had beers in our hands during that one. And good beers, by the way. What's going on, man? Yeah, what do you got for us this week?
So I have much to go. Spam attack, I call it valid reasons for organic. I have lots of, I'm going to. And let's see, right here, new. So one, the official point and lots of. So first we have RISC-V, a processor architecture, just like our ARM or Intel or AMD processor before. So this one is open source and you don't have a license use this processor architecture, but it's really a niche. It's still a niche, but it's nice to see that Monero architecture. Then the daemon has some bug fixes, which is really nice. And they disable ports EI2P, which is a network protocol for, I haven't interesting. It's an alternative to the Tor net. Then there was a bug fix that caused transactions to remain in transaction. And I think this one is related to the high transaction we are currently. And we saw a really large ticks Monero. We had this big, this large. But you are watching transaction right now. It looks much better. And they fixed a slow RPC call for some edge cases, good as well. And for the wallet, they fixed the set priority that is getting during transfers. I'm not sure if this is related somehow to this fix, because if you wanted to do a Monero transaction with the fees set to auto, it didn't set the higher fee if the TX pool was. But they fixed this, and now the X pool is not sure which one of these was is fixed. But yeah, now you can just the auto setting that again, and it will make sure your transaction will get mined quickly. Yes, and we see some to OpenSSL and RandomX. So RandomX had a bug that crashes on macOS with a new process. So the next update is for the GUI wallet and has all the updates saw from here, because the Monero CLI integrated it. But they have added support for the Trezor Wallets 3. Guess that's a hardware wallet. I can't say anything about this, but yeah. And it fixed a crash on macOS, which happened quite often. So this is nice. And they've updated the Qt, which is framework. I don't know what's the wording, but I would call it a framework in which the GUI is written. And they updated Ppool, which is integrated into the GUI, to version 0.10, which is so. We even can look at the repository, and I can see there is even a newer tag created, the 0.3 tag, not officially released yet, but a new release with the 0.3 version. So after those updates, Feather Wallet has two updates. The latest version is 2.6.5. And in the meantime, we saw they also fixed the fee adjustment. So even with Feather Wallet, I think you cannot set the manually in the wallet, Feather Wallet, but it's always automatic. It's always doing the correct right now. And I think this is funny. On the Windows version, they mitigated a false positive antivirus detection because they embedded the word kryptonite. Windows always gets crazy words like kryptonite or random things. Malware is mining Monero. So, and they updated the integrated Tor client to the latest version, which is really nice. I really like that they always are really up to date or even ahead of the official releases. I'm a big fan of Feather Wallet. I would always use Feather Wallet instead of the official GUI because I always had some weird issues with the GUI. Yes, they now allow restoring the legacy seeds. They call, I think they call legacy seeds the 25 word seeds from the official Monero wallet because Feather Wallet uses poly seeds or shorter seed, and you can even now restore seeds if you are missing the 25th checksum word, which is a nice addition. And what I really like, they added the option to remove failed transactions. This was driving me crazy. Sometimes I had a transaction that has failed to broadcast to the network for whatever reason, but then it was stuck in the wallet, and it was dangerous because if you right click on it, you could always rebroadcast that transaction. And this is a problem because it failed. And then I did another transaction, and the other person received already the Monero. But if I would click on that failed transaction and rebroadcast it, they would get it twice. So finally, I could delete the failed transaction from the wallet, and I don't get into that risk anymore. So another update came out 16 minutes ago. So Anonero is a wallet for Android. It's very minimal, and it goes in the direction of a hardware wallet with two parts. It has two different apps. It has Anon and Nero. Anonero is like an offline wallet, which one part is like the online part, and the other part is the offline part where you can sign transactions. Yes, and they released a new version, and it updates to version 0.3. So they are also ahead of the time. So now we're coming to a repository. It's called Monero Ecosystem. And the problem is it's no longer maintained. So all repositories inside here got archived just a few days ago. And this organization was run by Eric. I don't know how to pronounce his name. I'll just call him Eric. And I saw he has closed this whole project because he doesn't have enough time. He already announced it 3 years ago. And I don't think he found someone to take care of the project now. Every repository gets archived, and everybody who has had his project into this organization now has to move it back to his personal account. So it was really nice. It was, and there were different repositories inside this, mainly like Monero clients for different programming languages, like for Python and TypeScript, but also the Monero outreach docs were inside here, a guide for the GUI wallet, and yeah, some projects here. I hope to see they are still active in another place. I mean, it's still public. You can still look in this, but yeah, they won't get any updates. Sad to see, but Yeah, that's how it is. So my friend Alex, called Alex Anarcho on X, he's a software developer and he has created something new. It's called XMR T3 Starter. It's a starter project which you can use to create your own Monero web application. And it uses a really modern technology stack like Next.js and the T3 stack with Tailwind, CSS, Shed, CNUI, and tRPC, and the TypeScript library Monero TypeScript. And you can easily start, like, clone this project and use it for your own project, like TipXMR, which is our project, which is based on the same tech stack. Yeah, you can look at the tech stack here. Software developers, they likely know most of these technologies. So really nice to see here the Monero Studio. Have an eye on this project. I think there might come more projects soon. So another thing is BISC 2. Like, this is a decentralized exchange, and we saw it a long time in version 1, and now they released the second version, which is the successor of BISC 1. And let me show you what they changed. I think they changed quite a lot. So with BISC 1, you had to deposit some Bitcoin to trade. But now they introduce BISC Easy, which is a trading protocol, which doesn't use any security deposits. And this is quite nice because you always had to have already had to have Bitcoin in order to use BISC. And this is bad for beginners who want to start with decentralized exchanges and don't have any Bitcoin yet. And they want to add more trading protocols like multisig or swaps between Lightning Bitcoin and Mainnet Bitcoin for Liquid BTC. And they have their own protocol called BISC Lightning, which is between fiat. I don't know how this should work. But the most interesting is they want to support Monero swaps, so cross-chain atomic swaps between Bitcoin and Monero. But all of these things here are not ready yet. They only have their classic trading protocol between Bitcoin and fiat and Monero. And yeah, let's have a look at the next. So this project is new. It's called XMR Haystack. You can use this to look which of your transactions are used on the blockchain from other transactions, like your outputs are going to be used as decoys, or your one-time addresses that are on the blockchain are used as decoys. And yeah, I haven't tried it, but you can connect a wallet and it will scan the blockchain and mark any of your addresses that are used in decoys, which is great for blockchain analysis companies. But yeah, you can use it yourself as well. Then there's a new release of Haveno. They mostly updated dependencies. I'm not sure when it's coming and getting a 0.1 release, but I think they are already pretty much advanced. They are still on the stage net, but yeah. I'm excited for Haveno. And I'm also excited for Seraphis. And yeah, you just had Luke Parker and yeah, on the stage. And here is you were talking about it. Yeah, they updated a new draft in version 0.3 just 2 weeks ago. And I wish I could tell you what has updated, but I'm honest, I don't understand any of this. This is high level mathematics and cryptographics. I don't understand this, and I'm sorry, I cannot explain to you what this all means, but I'm excited for Seraphis. And the last update for today is about the Monero book from Kuprate. So they are documenting the whole Monero protocol inside a book, and we can jump into it and have a look at really nice to read about all the technical implementations of the protocol. I mean, it's also not too hard to read. I think it's still a work in progress, but yeah, I really like that the Monero community is going in the educational field, and they show things like this. So yeah, that was the dev report for this week.
Awesome. That was great. But I could see there's a lot of new Monero stuff. That was cool seeing that there's a lot of work. And then that XMR stack that you, that's interesting. I'm curious what that means. But yeah, with that being said, I think we are going to get into the news. If I can switch over and maybe Doug will come back over here. He's talking right. But thanks for showing us all that stuff, Hyundai House.
Yes. See you in 2 weeks.
Yeah. And with that being said, the news segment.
And now for our weekly news segment.
So we got this tweet here, breaking bullish Bitcoin. Up there. There we go.
Yeah, there you go.
The White House expects 250K by 2035. They're counting on it for their tax revenues. Yes, we have like a community note here talking about the White House budget doesn't actually contain Bitcoin price projections, but they're expecting to have a lot of revenue based on taxes and the regulation that they're doing, which in turn, I guess, makes it bullish because they know that people are...
Well, it shows, in my opinion, the government fully in tax suppression. Yep. And they're excited that it's going up in price because they're going to get their flesh.
More money out of thin air, right?
They'll get their capital gains or unrealized.
Boy.
I've always been throwing that out there.
Yep.
I don't think it's that far-fetched.
I can see that happening. I can see that happening, because I mean these things by themselves shouldn't even have capital gains. They're currency.
Yeah, I was having a discussion with them yesterday. They it was over the meme of I lost my Monero in a boating accident. And they don't really, I don't know, they don't really like that concept or that idea. I think it's kind of BS. But for me, it kind of makes sense. The fact that you can't see how Monero has moved on chain adds security and adds plausible deniability. Not saying your taxes, guys, because nobody wants to end up in jail or to have to pay some crazy fines. And the U.S. government has a lot of resources.
Yep.
But there are advantages to having a tool that allows you to completely control your own money and in a way where nobody, how you use it, will still have it.
All right. Moving on. Next, we got this tweet from the Zano Project. They are launching their Zarganium hard fork. Which is now just, well, I guess 0 days away. I guess it's already been done by now. It's already been done. We are glad to inform our community that Zano D/VCSlag, the tech that allows us to have assets on top of Zano, has recently been successfully audited by CipherStack, the company that helps Stack Wallet, an applied cryptography consultancy. And yeah, they do other stuff. The audit passed and no critical issues that require any action have been found. You can find the results of this audit together with the Zarganium code audit, which has already been done in 2021 here. CipherStack made a post about this audit on the Monero forum as well. Having received the positive results of this audit is the icing on the cake as we count down to the Zarganium hard fork, which happened now.
Yeah, why didn't they do the post at all? Okay, because so in the midst of doing this audit, they were actually auditing CLSAG in general, right?
Yep.
So it was a bonus for Monero benefiting from the development of Zarganium and benefiting from the efforts that they're putting in by having further audits going into an element of Monero. So that's nice to see. Other projects that in the ecosystem, they're kind of their research and development budget going towards helping. So it's nice to see that.
That is super cool to see.
Yeah.
And then next we got this tweet from Monero Mateo. Many Bitcoin miners will lobby for this. It's a barrier of entry for competitors. They will also bring EPA regulations. TX fees will become more expensive as a result. They already are expensive, which encourages third-party custody, who will also support this. Simple profit incentives, no CC necessary. And another tweet from this guy, Pierre Richard. Biden administration is proposing a 30% tax on electricity used by Bitcoin miners, even if you're off-grid. All of the reasons they provide are pretextual. The real reason is that they want to suppress Bitcoin and BTC.
So just, you know, another example of the attacks that Rand has, but the ability to see who all the miners are, just large companies at this point that are approachable, and the government will be creating more and more regulations, perhaps taxes that affect them, and you could expect that these corporations will be bending the knee because they want to exist as corporations. And in fact, perhaps potentially they benefit while they don't want to be paying these taxes. For them, they might see it as a barrier to entry for other companies that involved in a way benefit and welcome taxes on all of those purposes. So in my mind, it's just kind of another example of the attack services that Bitcoin has. And here's the example of where the mining network and system can be essentially regulated and even taxed by the U.S. government.
It doesn't help that people have to use these $10,000 super power hungry ASICs just to mine Bitcoin. But like, tax on electricity is already like, that's pretty crazy just because you're Bitcoin mining. But
it's
then
completely absurd.
It's absurd. And then they go further and off grid.
Right.
So you're not even using like the existing infrastructure that's been partially subsidized, your own solar or whatever.
Right.
And they want to tax that. Your own, yeah. Yeah.
Other things. So yeah, the whole premise doesn't make sense.
No, it doesn't.
But Monero, just another example of a problem that right there, if there ever was a limitation of tax or mining.
Well, I guess you just can't use a computer.
That's absurd as charging tax on every computer.
Yeah. I mean, there's like tons of ways that people like, even with Bitcoin mining, like there's tons of ways that the cost of that gets heavily subsidized by, we're using this to heat homes. Especially from the cold, or we're using this, we're using like certain ways to cool it down that would cost more. But yeah, this is just like really far with just like control over this, and it's very specific to. So next we got this video from. Let's see if I can go back to the beginning here. Michael Saylor, Saudi Agris posted. I've been saying that for 8 years, but these finance bros have poisoned.
And that's based on a misunderstanding. People refer to as currency or digital as
currency.
It does unfortunate historic. And that's based on a misunderstanding. People refer to currency, digital currency.
All right, we keep playing it on a loop. It's a little hard to hear, but
yeah, it's hard for us to hear.
Michael Saylor,
did you catch it?
It's an unfortunate historical artifact. We call it having a use case. I don't know. I don't even know. It's completely lost the plot.
I mean, like from the beginning, this guy was obviously like a grip. He was trying to use it for money.
So Monero. I mean, Bitcoin is the eyes of my property, Manhattan. You can own a piece of the property. It's not meant to be. It's not meant to be real cash. It's just a store of value. It's digital energy, which that you know my mind. But this is the main spokesman essentially for Bitcoin.
Yeah,
and it's just unfortunate to see the direction that he's leading the technology. But that's where Monero comes in, right, guys? So everything that he's saying, it's unfortunate. It's an unfortunate historical artifact. Well, that's exactly what Monero is and wants to be.
All right, next we got this post from at BTC Gandalf. You check the on-chain flows and realize that the Bitcoin spot ETF providers now hold 95% of the Bitcoin supply. It's all held by just three custodians. BTC is now just numbers moving around in an Oracle database. Gary Gensler was right. On-chain analysis.
Just another example, right? Essentially fiatized in a way. I've been holding ETF that represents to, you know, like a gold ETF, right? And it's just numbers on a screen at that point. They hold these powers that be, right, essentially hold all the Bitcoin, will eventually hold a large, vast majority of the Bitcoin, and people will just own a promise.
I think the ETF has been kind of one of the nails in the coffin, like as you're saying, like they're just able to totally control the money supply of Bitcoin at this point.
That's an astounding.
That's
fact.
Crazy.
The Bitcoin spot providers now hold 90. I mean,
that seems a little bit. I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of money in the ETFs already.
I don't know.
There's a whole thread here. It might not be complete. There is a whole thread here that you guys can take a look at and go through and see what he's all saying. Of course, we don't have time to read through all of it here. But I think the ETF is already. I mean, like the points are still valid, regardless of how much money control has. The points. Yeah. Of why you wouldn't want. And here's a tweet from you.
Oh, here's a tweet from me. What was that? Oh, this.
Sterling Gov.
The good news is they will appealing the decision. Those guys were here at the conference giving an update. I went down. Everybody, I'm going to try to maybe grab them today at some little Monero talk. But what we're learning is what we already know, that when you use Bitcoin, you're taking a very large risk that you're. You can be accused of a crime if that Bitcoin was ever a crime. even if you weren't the one who committed that crime necessarily.
Yeah.
When you use Bitcoin, it comes with the trail of past transactions, and if those past transactions were related to any criminal activity, you may be the one that catches the blame for that. This is just, you know, yet again, we talk about it all the time.
Well, the really scary thing about this case is that it wasn't even like definitive of them, like of their ability to trace Bitcoin in this case to prove that it was Roman Sterlingov. They're just using the idea that Bitcoin kind of make up this idea based on not enough corroborating evidence. It's very clear that it's not enough. From Tor talking yesterday,
yeah,
it wasn't really enough evidence, but they're giving him a guilty verdict anyway. And what this looks like, they may be trying to use one of this big case that can be used for future cases down the road. Exactly. It's a lot of, like, judge doesn't understand how any of this stuff works. A lot of the jury, most jury probably has no idea either.
They didn't have any hard computer with evidence that showed that one running the Fog network. They didn't have any of that. All they had was a trail.
Like a shared IP, like a VPN IP address, right?
Right, right.
That's like shared.
Well, they had a past Bitcoin transaction that coincided with the purchase of the Bitcoin, right?
Yep, yep.
Which didn't necessarily mean that he was the one who purchased the domain, but that he held Bitcoin at some point that was involved in.
Yeah.
That's really what they hung him on.
Yep.
And so, like I was saying before, I mean, what that really means is, anytime you could be that sucker that's using Bitcoin that was previously used in a crime, and if the government's looking for a fall guy,
and you happen to be the one that you're KYC'd, they might just be like, oh, that guy,
right?
That guy.
So it's a loss for Roman to win chain analysis and the ability of government chain analysis.
Well, I think it's mainly just a win, because like CipherTrace, they had an expert opinion that was not allowed to be presented because even CipherTrace, they were showing how it wasn't enough evidence to prove that it was that actually that purchase.
CipherTrace, another chain analysis.
Yeah.
They
were criticizing
method. I'm not sure what happened there.
It sounds like just a few days before there's something happened, and suddenly they weren't allowed to have their witness come and give, which is something behind closed.
Like pressure was on them for whatever reason.
Yep. Because they all get funded by the government.
Right.
Yeah. So
which is another big issue. All these guys that it's kind of a revolving, working for the government on the side of prosecuting and then going to work for these chain analysis in-house, maybe.
All right, thank you, Paddy. It was an expert testimony. I was saying opinion.
Right.
That's what I heard from. You're saying that for real they suppress the CipherTrace testimony. Yeah, that's what it sounded like based on what Tor was saying yesterday. I think that will probably be up online. There's no reason that they would live stream them later.
No, yeah, I think it'll be up, and I'll try. But the real lesson, the government chain it up, or is showing that they have the misuse chain. You know, whether or not this guy is ultimately guilty, it's showing in a court of law, chain analysis will be used against you.
Even though the chain analysis itself is flawed, but then the way in which this case was done was like just so bad.
Yeah.
Because chain analysis already, like, yeah, Bitcoin is somewhat traceable, but chain analysis is still, like, on Bitcoin is, like, not always definitive. Like, there's this black box, you know, magic that's going on between chain analysis and CipherTrace.
So they've got these. What is kind of the lesson there, guys? That already
Shum should have used Monero.
Should have used Monero. And the.
Well, unfortunately, when he had. That was back in, what, like 2013, though? That was before. So we can give him a pass.
Yeah.
But nowadays, Monero really. Everyone had the CipherTrace.
CipherTrace. And so the other thing that came out of the leaf.
Oh, yeah, CipherTrace. They're closing doors, right?
Closed.
I wonder if we have one of those. We have one of those.
Days after this happened. It's all very.
There it is. I'll move to this one real quick.
Okay.
CipherTrace issues report critical of Fed's use of Chainalysis and US v. Sterlingov. We just talked about that. Then MasterCard suddenly pulls it and shuts the whole tracing firm down. Not a coincidence. Don't dare question US attorneys or there is career risk. Wow.
That's power. That's
either
power
that was the case or it was just because they weren't enough money. But Scoop, the MasterCard owned CipherTrace informed clients that it is shutting down key blockchain analytics products. This comes just a month after MasterCard pulled an expert report from a CipherTrace director in the Bitcoin Fog case due to data issues. Wow, this is getting pretty out there.
And for those not familiar with CipherTrace, they are the firm that.
But so far we haven't seen that.
And they claim to have a tool that they were using, quote unquote, tracing Monero or gaining insight into
transactions. Oh, they're blocking me from looking at this article. Oh, well.
That was never proved to be the case. There's a famous interview, Justin Ehrenhofer grilling, right? I don't know if you've ever seen that, Tux, where Justin interviews somebody from CipherTrace.
I don't think I've seen that, no.
Gains insight into what they were suggesting the tool was that they had. And from that interview, what was gathered was that
it's like pretty much a black box,
right? They
didn't
have much of anything. They were just making probable.
I see. Which is the most you can do with Monero. As far as I know, the IRS bounty has never been claimed, being able to determine a sick-based Monero for like sick. I'm sure now they would offer millions. So far, no. All right. So last, we've got video also. MicroStrategy announced for the second time in less than 2 weeks that it will sell convertible notes to buy more Bitcoin.
The top seller, Digital Cash, is doubling down or tripling, but I don't even know. He's buying more Bitcoin. He's buying more digital property. So if you want to be a part of Michael Saylor land and a piece of his digital property, you can buy some Bitcoin and hope that he never sells it.
Bitcoin's going to go to $3 billion. It's already at what? The market cap's already at like over $1.5 trillion, right?
Right.
It's like how much higher can it possibly go? Yeah. All right.
All right.
I guess
I caught this video with the Bitcoin.
How many minutes to play?
Start a couple. Here, let me see.
Okay.
That adoption. It hasn't become any more of a currency than it created.
That's a very fair thing. It hasn't, because the problem is it keeps going up, so you're disincentivized to sell it, or it's very volatile, right? It's not very good as a currency.
Well, it's not very good at the main thing it was designed for. But and I remember when I first heard about it, when I first heard about Bitcoin, the way it was sold to me is circumvent all the AML requirements. You get out of the banking system. You can transact anonymously in private. You don't have to worry about the government spying on you. You can be out of the banking system.
I got into it for an entirely different reason, which is, as Dan Tapiero would call it, it's the security truth machine. It's the value of the lead.
So Peter Schiff, much more in the know than Michael Saylor. I thought the original point was the ability, essentially. It's not even those purposes. It doesn't serve utility. And this is where I've kind of always agreed with Peter Schiff that he acted to be. And that's why he kind of in awe of the fact that it, you know, gained this much value. It doesn't really provide the base utility that it provides. It's become just a purely speculative, without a base utility under. While he may be shunned from most in crypto, he appears to understand it better than Michael Saylor.
Yep. Or I think Saylor understands that he's just taking advantage.
He's selling stuff.
Yep. Most of these people, they all know. They know. They're just making mechanics.
But I often...
Because, I mean, it kind of fulfills... Conclusion. Yeah. Like, all right. I think that was it. That was pretty much it for the news, guys.
We're going to see if we get this gentleman up here real quick. We got Mike from CoinCards. Jump down over here. So no viewers on stage. This will be our viewer on stage today. Let's run the viewers on stage segment.
All right.
We've already had our special guests.
Sorry guys, if we did regular viewers on stage, it would probably take long this
time.
Yeah,
we just don't have the time. We got to get back to the actual conference, so it'll be our viewer.
Yep. All right.
And he has the
viewers
watching.
On stage. It's that time where we invite you, the viewers, up on stage to comment on what you've heard so far today, ask the guest a question, or maybe talk about what. Come on down.
You can hear.
All right,
okay.
All right, Mike, what's going on, man? For those who don't know who you are,
CEO and founder of Coin.com. Accessible in Canada, US, UK, and Australia.
Fantastic. Yeah, Coin Cards. We talk about it all the time on this show. It's become a fantastic utility for Monero users and Bitcoin users. Obviously, it's Monero talk, right? So we are Monerotopia. So we're always talking about ways in which people can use their Monero. Coin Cards is a great way to do it. Granted, it's not a way to essentially buy goods or services directly with Monero, but it's a workaround way to use Monero for essentially almost anything, where you could buy a gift card instantly with Monero without giving up very little information, personal information, and then you can use that gift card essentially on the spot to purchase whatever it is you want to purchase. So we're big fans of that here, and a big fan of CoinCards in general for supporting the show, Monerotopia. I greatly appreciate all that. So great work, man. I know CoinCards has always been, in your mind, a kind of a bridge, right? A tool that's there for us to use in the meantime before we gain really real world mass adoption or directly accepting how do you feel about that? Yeah, these days, you still have that kind of same opinion?
That's still the same. Coin cards, and at which point mass adoption happens, everybody just takes Bitcoin and Monero natively, and we disappear into the sunset. We don't need to exist, and I'm okay with that because that means that cryptocurrency in general is winning.
Yeah, which is beautiful, right? So this, it's nice to have a guy like you running this company.
Yeah, because it's literally your business that would basically be done, but you're still you want that mission to be accomplished. You're just trying to help facilitate that in the meantime.
And before you do disappear, I think we're going to see a lot more usage because we're going to be, I feel, sector adoption at some time, right? I don't think overnight everybody's accepting Monero and Bitcoin natively. I think we're here for some time. And I think while we do sit here, more and more people are going to start using coin cards.
Yeah, I think so. Originally, we're actually this year. So originally when I started it, I was like, this is probably a 10-year business and I'll be out. And, I was hopeful that cryptocurrency would take off overnight kind of thing. But I mean, now I'm like, we're probably going to be here at least another 10 years or so, probably more. But, we're always pushing for adoption and always trying to support events like Finney Forum and Monerotopia that, promote adoption and not just the Bitcoin maximalist hodl mentality, yeah. Which I don't agree with, but some people do. But eventually everybody's going to need to cash out, and that's when we're going to be here.
So that's when you go to coin cards, and I'm an uptick right now, right? With bull market.
Yeah, every bull market brings in a big crowd of people who want to cash out, at least maybe take some profit. And, I don't think anybody's dumping everything, but I think people, as the price goes up, they start to realize, okay, I want something fancy for my troubles here.
Yeah, it's meant to be. It's money for your entire life. The purpose you live off of. So coin cards do that. Can you give us any insights into numbers? Monero, I always love those you put out there. Monero is always number two on the list.
Yeah, Monero's always number two, except for last month where it was actually number three.
Oh, okay.
USDC kind of took over. Wow. Which was weird.
Jesus.
What's the point of that?
I don't know. But Monero has been pretty strong. I mean, always up in the high 20%, secondly to Bitcoin for the majority. We're actually going to, at the request of the Ronin guys, we're going to do a yearly summary 23. That's kind of coming up. We'll probably launch or probably post that in the next couple of days and just kind of see what the yearly summary it was. Monero, though, I think is probably bigger in the US and the UK than it is, say, in Canada for us. So it's kind of weird that Canada's kind of, with all the stuff we have going on in Canada, that we're still a little reluctant to use Monero, but the rest of the world, I think.
Yeah, we got to tap in that, man. You got to get the word out.
I'm trying.
We were talking about Canada yesterday. Oh yeah. My God. I've read to hear it from a Canadian. No, it's real. It's as bad as.
Yeah, it's as bad as people think it is, and sometimes worse. I mean, Vancouver in general, we give out free drugs to people and we watch them overdose. And it's just the government's just crazy at point, MAID is our medical assisted dying. We have probably the highest number of medically assisted suicides out of any civilized country. And then they're opening it up this year later to depressed people. So, I mean, depression as a way to medically suicide is kind of disgusting in my mind. Get those people help. Don't just kill them off. But the government's crunched the numbers, and it's cheaper to kill people off than to help
here's
them.
Here's your free drug. We're not talking about marijuana. This is like hard drugs. Yeah, right? Here's your free drugs, and here's your meth ability. If you want to kill yourself, we'll do it for you. Free charge.
it's crazy.
That's wild, guys. And unfortunately, Canada to really be on the forefront of this
craziness.
You'll own nothing and be happy type of future, right?
Especially with housing too. We've got nobody can own a house in Canada. It's insane.
So what do we got to do to get the word out on Monero as a tool for liberty? And I mean,
remind me. I see information that's like tech in Portland, but how hard is it right now, Canada? Are you able to just go on any of these exchanges and buy it, or is it pretty related like it is?
So I think the only exchange that has it open in Canada would be Kraken.
Okay, so also Kraken.
So Kraken you can. Binance has been outlawed. I mean, they do list it. Monero anyways, so screw them. I think it's pretty much only Kraken and then peer-to-peer.
Wow.
And then we got the atomic swaps that Samurai's doing as well.
Sure. You got those methods, but in terms of centralized exchanges for the noobs, it's Kraken.
It's just Kraken at this point.
Which is the same in the U.S. I mean, it's better than New York, right? So if there's any place that's worse than Canada, it's New York.
Sorry, New York.
You got to still pay for it. We're not there yet, but I don't know. I feel like it starts in Canada and then it comes down to New York City. So we'll probably be dealing with that soon too, which is quite depressing. But not depressing enough for me to use one of these services, guys. Don't worry, no. I'm here to stay. Any other info you want to get out there?
Just let the community know that we're in Australia now.
Oh, another freedom-loving country. Yeah. you're trying. We're trying. Putting the lifelines out there.
And I mean, Monero is picking up in Australia. The orders are coming through, and they're in Monero.
That's huge.
We're going to be expanding into the European zone within the next couple of weeks, hopefully. So,
wow, next couple of weeks.
Yeah, so...
How about South America?
That will be next. We'll kind of take a look and see.
Can you make that happen by Monerotopia in November?
We'll try.
Can we get a commitment?
No.
We'll try. There's some time.
That's awesome. Yeah. I love what you're doing.
Thank you.
You know, you put a ton of work into this, obviously, jobs. The Monero community is very much better. Thank you.
Yeah, we love the Monero community.
Yeah. You know, you don't charge like astronomical fees or anything. It's like...
No, actually, in the US, UK, and Australia, we've cut all of our fees. So it's 100% just face value now.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, yeah. Sorry, I didn't realize that.
No, I totally forgot about that, too. Yeah. It's so new that I forgot.
In some instances, you kind of can save money, no? Or is it like...
It's all face value.
Okay.
It's all market rate, though. So we don't bump up any of our rates.
Right. So pretty much anything you want to buy with Monero,
yeah,
just clearly understand. And once again, in terms of the information that people have to provide, just an email, right?
So email and a name.
Right. Email and a name.
Yeah. And that's it. Right. You don't have to register for an account, so you don't need to keep a password. That's totally optional. If you want your order history, then you do have to register for an account, but otherwise no account needed, just a name and an email.
Awesome, man. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Appreciate it.
All right. Have a good day, guys.
So sweet, as always. Appreciate it.
Thanks, all right, mate. Yeah, thanks for coming on. Yeah, all right. Thanks. So anything else?
No, I think we'll wrap it up with that so we could go back to the conference. Guys, I hope you guys enjoy this. This is great.
Yeah.
Now we're going to go do the Monero panel. I feel like we already did it. I hope it doesn't suck because we kind of talked about everything already. I'm not one who likes to rehash just said, but we're going to go do that. I'm sure it'll be great. It'll be fun. Guys, you can tune into Finiforum. They are streaming it all live. So anybody that wants to
check
out the talks.
There's a few more talks happening today.
Recorded or it's just live?
It's live. I think they will be up at some point. I can't imagine them like, I don't know where.
Yeah.
I imagine they'll put it on.
Yeah. So tune into the Monero one, which we're going to be doing in about a half hour or even less. So 1:30?
1:50.
1:50. Okay.
We got a little more time.
50 minutes from now, guys, tune in on the Finiforum Twitter. We'll be doing a Monero panel. It's super cool. Obviously, we kind of hashed out a lot of things here. I'll talk to Tux. Maybe come up with some different topics. Thanks, guys. Do these shows every Saturday at 11 a.m. Eastern. Tune in, subscribe, share it with your friends. Get the word out. We have 545 live viewers.
Yeah, guys.
Hey, the numbers are the numbers. you know, we love Twitter and how they change their accounting of viewership.
Only 37 on YouTube. But
all right, guys. We'll call it here. Thank you, everybody. Right. Sorry we're not doing viewers on stage, but get back to the...
That was a six-hour stream today. Sorry, guys.
Get back to the people.
All right.
Cheers. Cheers.
Joining us is Monero Talk. We stream live shows every Saturday at 11 Eastern into EntipsTube and Odyssey. Or listen to the podcast iTunes, Spotify, or Stitcher. Don't forget to follow us on for join us for Topia. See you all next...